All right, folks. Apologies for my tardiness. Sometimes our morning meetings tend to stretch on longer than I certainly would like. So with that, we'll go ahead and call the committee to order. If we could please take the roll.
Vice Chair Cuff.
Here.
Senator Lang.
Here.
Senator Boldman.
I'm here.
Representative M. Regeer.
Excused.
Representative Fitzpatrick. Representative Tuss?
Here.
Chair Hopkins?
Here.
All right. Committee now having a quorum. Mr. Vice Chair, do you have time for us to do the switcheroo? Excellent. Well, then, with that, folks, we're going to go ahead and just, unless we have something before we open on the bill, we can cover everything afterwards, right? Perfect. We're going to go ahead and pass the gavel over and start opening on our bill.
Let's see, what is the number? What's the bill? Chairman Representative Hopkins will be introducing House Bill 12. And go ahead, Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Mike Hopkins, HOPKINS, representative for House District 92, today returning House Bill 12 to the Long Range Planning Committee. I'm going to do this slightly quick because we have members that are going to need to hustle around a bit. During the 2019 legislative session, then Senator Terry Gautier, as some members would remember, brought forward a bill to help fund our beautiful museum, which you can see being constructed fairly close to your current location. That came with a pretty hefty price tag, rightfully so, but a hefty price tag nonetheless. During that session, there was a senator who may or may not currently be walking out of the room who had an idea, and that idea was that if we're looking to preserve Montana's historic and cultural heritage, we might not want to just look at Helena. Now, I'm a big fan of Helena. I was actually born here. But that being said, Montana's a pretty big state. Being a pretty big state, we have history throughout that entire state. And so the idea was maybe we should take a portion of that funding and silo it away and create a grant program that would allow us to help out not just, say, preserving works of art and cultural, you know, items of importance here in Helena, but throughout the state of Montana. That ended up becoming the Historic Preservation Grant Program. It came live for its first time during 2021 and had a pretty good run through. The only other thing that I would mention before we sit down, because again, we have really smart people here today that know what they're talking about to break us down for everything else, is to say that unlike, say, the Montana Coal Endowment Program or the Renewable Resource Grant Program, or this one is still a little bit newer. As such, during the last legislative session, members of the legislature decided to change up the way that it worked, at least ever so slightly. We reduced the total amount of award per grant, which allowed us to extend the funding line down and cover more projects. But then we also instituted a match requirement. And so whereas there are, well, we should be conducting oversight on all of these, but whereas there are some that, like the Montana Coal Endowment Program, which has just proven itself, I mean, that thing works beautifully. This one we want to make sure to keep our eyes on, and I think that we want to make sure that it's actually working, right? And we're actually able to get that money out to these projects and make sure that these important pieces of our state's history are actually being taken care of. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would return House Bill 12 to the tender loving graces of the Long Range Planning Subcommittee and look forward to our agenda. Senator Lang, could you turn on your microphone really fast for us, please? Sorry about that.
I thought we could hear everything in this room, but I guess they can't hear it in a recording upstairs. Thank you, Representative Hopkins. We'll just go to proponents of this House Bill 12. Please come up, tell where you're from, and make sure you've silenced all your cell phones before we start and proceed. Are we going in the order that we are here?
Chairman, if you could have Katie start off with a little breakdown, okay, maybe for the program, and then we'll bug Jason as well, just to put him on the spot, and then we can roll through our agenda if that works.
Okay. Katie, go ahead.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So I'm just going to go ahead and share my screen real quickly. But for those that are following along, I did pass out a number of handouts for you. Sorry, let me move this stuff so I can get the microphone closer. There we go. So you have in front of you, you should have a copy of House Bill 12. You should also have, I provided a handout on accommodations taxes for you, which I'll go over that in a second. It gives you an overview of the breakdown of that tax and how it works and some of the changes that are going to be coming in this next 2025 biennium. I also have a project listing for you. I put this together yesterday and for a reason, and I'll get into that in just a second. All right, let me go ahead and share my screen. Okay, so I'm going to start with the budget analysis, which is the last tab in your big binders if you want to follow along, but I will also have it on the screen for you. So on our Section F subcommittee webpage, I'm just going to go down to Montana Heritage Preservation Grants Program. And just like yesterday when we went through, it'll give you a comparison. That's the first table. Let me make it a little bigger. There we go. So this is looking at a comparison between what was appropriated for grants in the 2023 biennium, the number of grants, and the amount appropriated. And then the budget for the 2025 biennium, the number of grants that have been proposed to be funded, and the amount of funding associated with those 29 grants. And that is about $8.5 million. You can see that it is an increase of about $3 million in three more projects, and a total percentage increase of 54.8%. Similarly to what you heard yesterday, the revenue does play a lot into that. I looked back at the projections that we used for the 2023 biennium from last time, and we had projected in HJ2 about $2 million in fiscal year 2022, about $2.5 million in 2023, so $4.5 million was the projected revenue for last biennium. Let me show you what the actual was for 2022. So again, we were looking at about $2 million. Actual revenue was about $3.3 million. This table, which again, fund balance table, you can see we are using the projections now from HJ2 for the 2025 biennium. So we have projected $3.4 million for fiscal year 2023. We are looking at an ending fund balance at the end of the the 2023 biennium of about $2.6 million. For the 2025 biennium revenue projections, we are looking at about $8.4 million. So the accommodations taxes are coming in pretty strong. So what that is doing, so with the $2.6 million fund balance, and the $8.4 million in revenue projections. So that's kind of the funds you have to appropriate. And then what has been proposed in House Bill 12 is $8.5 million of projects. So that is going to give you an ending, a proposed ending fund balance of about $2.5 million. Before I jump ahead, I do want to just go really quickly to the accommodations tax brochure that I passed out. I know that Chair Hopkins in his opening kind of talked a little bit about what happened as far as the bill and the funding. So this funding is coming. There's two types of two different tax rates on room charges for lodging facilities. There's the lodging sales tax and there is the lodging facility use tax. Lodging facility use tax has a number of distributions, but as far as the lodging sales tax, that's the one we're going to be focusing on. So it is that 4% rate. You can see these are the numbers from the fiscal year 2022 actuals. So that gets divided up. 25% goes to heritage and historic preservation. 75% currently goes to the general fund. And then as far as this 25%, currently 20% is going into a construction account for the Montana Heritage Center. 5% is going to fund these grants. Within statute, starting January 1st of 2025, presumably the, knock on wood, the Heritage Center will be done. And so that funding, it will be reduced down to 6%, and that is for operations of the Heritage Center. The amount for the historic preservation grants will be increased by 1%. So there is a revenue increase built in to the statute, and that is reflected in the fund balance table that I just presented. And if you want to know more about accommodations taxes, we are going to have a presentation tomorrow morning at 7:15 down in the LFD conference room if you want to learn more and hear from the person that put this great brochure together. All right, so again, going back to our fund balance table, we're looking at an ending fund balance in the 2025 biennium of approximately $2.5 million. Now, if you take a look at your House Bill 12 bill, in Section 1, you can see that the appropriation is this $8,501,314. If you look at the number of grants, however, you can see that there is more than 29 grants. There are 48 grants listed. So basically how this bill is working is that all of the grants that were ranked are included in the bill. Sometimes grants will, for whatever reason, the grants will be returned. Maybe they don't meet startup conditions. Maybe the scope ends up being a lot bigger. So by authorizing all the projects, what you're doing is basically kind of creating a waiting room. So you'll have your funded grants that go to about number 29, and then you'll have your waiting room grants that if one drops out, the next one in the ranking gets to move up and gets the funding. Now going to this table that I passed out to you. It looks like this. I'm going to bring it up on my spreadsheet here. Okay, so I have in this, you have this table. So if you're looking right now, I'm going to scroll down. We're going to end at number 29, Wheeler Cabin. That's your $8.5 million. If you wanted to continue, wanted to increase the funding, so you have about $10,971,000. Total funding available to you to appropriate. You could keep funding, you could increase that appropriation to fund some more projects. That would, if you went in ranked order, that would get you to about number 34, the Acme Building Project. So you could keep funding, you can increase that appropriation if you would like to, it's your choice. And then below that, you can see the other projects that are, I guess you could call them in the waiting room to see if any of them drop out, those projects would get funded. The total grant for the grants proposed currently for all the grants is $14.1 million. And I believe that is all of my presentation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Katie. Do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, Jason, do you have anything for us? I just wanted to put you on the spot anyways. Wouldn't be a subcommittee meeting if we didn't. So with that, then, I think that we are ready to go ahead and start today's agenda. Thank you all very much for being with us here today. If you want to go ahead and start us rolling through, that would work out on our end. Do we have a first testifier of the day, as it were? Oh, are we? Okay. Please.
Chair, if I may, I have some opening remarks from the agency, and then we were thinking, if you're amenable to it, we could walk through and present each project. We have a nice picture that we can bring up that's kind of nice to give you a visual of the project, and then we can call project representatives up project by project.
That sounds perfect. Just for our end, because I always forget to say this, if we could grab the name and the spelling for the record, and then for everybody else in the room, because I literally never remember sitting here to say that, we do just need you to throw the name spelling up so that we got it for the record. I apologize for always forgetting that. Please.
Mr. Chairman, members of Long Range Planning, my name is Renee Lemon, L-E-M-O-N, and I'm the Division Administrator with Community MT within the Department of Commerce. Thank Thank you, Chair Hopkins, for carrying House Bill 12 and for the opportunity to review the project staff are recommending for funding. The lead Commerce staff working on the Historic Preservation Grant Program, Mackenzie Espeland, is joining me for the presentation. Ms. Espeland is a program specialist too within our division, and she's available to answer any questions the committee may have throughout the process and may present projects if I get called into another committee meeting. The Department of Commerce administers the program, which, as Chair Hopkins noted, was created through House Bill 338 during the 66th legislative session in 2019, and it's codified in Section 22.3.1305 through 1307. MHPG provides a competitive grant program for both public or private entities to preserve historic sites, historic societies, or history museums across the state. So types of projects include internal or external brick and mortar improvements that address infrastructure, building renovation, maintenance, or building code issues. Types of projects also include improvements that will enhance security, climate control, or fire protection. Eligible applicants include persons, which may be individuals applying through a fiscal agent, which is a 501c3 incorporated nonprofit tax-exempt organization, or in coordination with a local government. Eligible applicants also include associations, which could be for-profit or nonprofit, and governing units, which could be an incorporated city or town, county, consolidated government, or tribal government. Just a little bit about the process. So applications are submitted to Commerce by the statutory date of March 1st in years preceding a legislative session. Staff reviews the applications and provides funding recommendations based on six criteria that are actually in statute. So those criteria are support of economic activity or stimulus, purpose and need of the proposed project, project timeline and matching funds, state historic or heritage value, the experience of the applicant and capacity to complete the proposed project, and ongoing and future state economic benefit. So in accordance with the MHPG statute, staff consults with the Tourism Advisory Council and the State Historical Preservation Office to develop the final recommendations, which then are reviewed and approved by the governor's office prior to being sent to the legislature. Today, just give you a little bit of what we were thinking for the agenda. So we'll provide an overview of the 2023 biennium projects, just real quick overview. And specifically, we'll also provide an update on three projects that are not yet contracted and haven't met startup requirements. Statute requires the legislature to approve continued grant awards for these projects that haven't yet met startup requirements. Next, we'll provide an overview of the 2025 biennium applications that you'll be reviewing. And then, as I mentioned, we'll start to present the details. And we're planning to get through the first half of the applications, so that would be 1 through 24, and then cover the remaining projects over the coming days. After we present each project, with your permission and agreement, applicants will have the opportunity to testify. All 2025 biennium applicants were notified of this hearing and provided guidance should they wish to provide testimony in person, virtually on Zoom, or written testimony. We also notified those three 2023 biennium applicants that did not meet the deadline for startup requirements. We have a list of applicants who identified that they plan to attend the hearing in person or on Zoom, and provide brief testimony about their projects. We also have a stack of written testimony that we've received, and we've printed out copies for you all, so Mackenzie is going to hand those out. And I just wanted to thank staff and all of the applicants. As this meeting got scheduled, everyone scrambled very quickly, and a lot of them are coming in person or will be here on Zoom to directly present on their applications. So with that, Ms. Espeland and I are available to answer any questions that the committee has throughout the process. And if we can't answer a question on the spot, we'll get you an answer by the end of the day. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my introductory comments. With your permission, I can begin the presentation whenever you're ready.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. And a quick apology. Usually when we do these subcommittee sessions, we have a fairly regular order to the way that the bills come before us, and we've had to switch that up a little bit this time around since one of the bills has become rather larger than we are used to. So we have had to push this up to the beginning of the session. I know that was probably a bit of a surprise for individuals that might be needing to make plans to come here and talk to us. So apologies from myself. I think we do have one question for you really fast, and that's from Representative Tuss. Were you looking to ask a question? Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Lemon, Could you go over once again what the state's obligation is for those projects that failed to meet the startup requirements? I want to be real clear about what the obligation that we have for those, or lack of obligation.
Chair Hopkins, Representative Tuss, great question. I'm just looking at my notes here because I will go over this a little bit later in the slideshow when I present those three projects. But House Bill 12 from the 2021 legislative session, so last session, stated, and I'm quoting here, any of the projects that have not completed the conditions described in Section 3.1, which are startup conditions to be contracted, by September 1st, 2022, must be reviewed by the next regular legislature to determine if the authorized grants should be withdrawn.
Thank you, Representative Tuss. Is there any other questions, comments from members of the committee before we crack on, as it were? Seeing none, thank you so much. Appreciate it, and I think we're good to move forward.
Okay. All right, so I'm just going to get comfortable with my PowerPoint here. All right, so just real quick again, agenda. I'm going to go over the 2023 biennium projects, those three that didn't meet startup, and then an overview of the 2025 biennium projects, and then we'll start jumping into each project. So this is a dashboard that I put together to give you an overview of the 2023 biennium projects. So the legislature appropriated $5.4 million for 26 projects in the 2023 biennium. And you can see that this is a match program, which I'll talk about in a moment here. There's a match requirement. So on average, for every $1 of MHPG funds, $2.77 were leveraged from other sources. And then if you look to the right side of this dashboard, it gives you a breakdown of applicant type. So a majority of these projects are from nonprofit organizations. We also have government and for-profit applicants or grantees as well. These are called donut, kind of like pie charts. The one on the right is a breakdown of types of projects. So you can see that most of them are historic sites, and then we do have history museums. And then the bottom gives you the project status. So most of the projects are contracted, and we anticipate that these will be completed in the 2023 construction season. And then we have four that have been completed, and then we have two that are not contracted and one that's been withdrawn. And those are the three that we'll be going into in a little bit more detail. And I know that the match requirement, since it was brought up last session, I've gotten a lot of questions about that, so I thought I'd just go over it just briefly. So the match requirement is 20% of the total project cost for government entities. And then for All others, so that would be the nonprofits and the for-profits, it's a 20% match of the total grant request. And let me know if you want me to say that again. So for government entities, it's the 20% match of the total project cost. For all other entities, it's 20% match of the total grant request. So of the awarded projects last cycle, eight of the projects did have challenges meeting this match. Seven of them were smaller history museums. And the impacts were that it just took them a while to find that match. So the project timelines were delayed. And that's because this came during the legislative session, so they weren't aware of the match requirement when they applied. So it just meant that they had to find that match when the project was awarded. So I'm just going to pause there to see if there are any questions before I move into those three projects that haven't yet met startup.
And do we have any questions or comments from members of the committee? Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lemon, go over the time frame. You said March is when they have to have them in there. So can someone still apply March of 23 and get money in through the legislature in 23? I would assume not, but I don't know that.
They cannot. No, okay. They have to apply by that March 1st before the
year
session
prior
starts.
To the session. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Senator Lang. Speaker Regeer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at a nonprofit just under 20% for non-government. I see a few here that are under 20%. Like the Baker State Bank building, 18%, or Ringling at 17%. So is that a hard and fast 20% or?
So Chair Hopkins, Speaker Regeer. So let's take Ringling. So they would be required, because they are not a government entity, to provide 20% match of the grant request. And I don't have it up right now.
What number are they on?
It might, with your permission, as we go through the projects, we might talk about specific match for each one. Because if I'm remembering right, and I don't have it in front of me, I'd have to look it up. But so the Ringling was a for-profit, and so they'd be required to have 20% of the grant award, not of total project cost.
Just follow. So if I'm reading this right, I guess, and that's part of my question, is percent match here, 17%. Out of 117. So I guess the question, one, am I reading it right? And the second one, is that a hard and fast 20%, or do you take into account other external considerations?
Chair Hopkins, Speaker Regeer.
Same thing.
So I am going to defer that question. I believe it is a hard and fast rule, but I'm looking at my staff over there, and it looks like they're discussing it. We just need to look at the requested award, because it have to be, so that's showing the total project cost. We need to just look at the requested award for that one.
And I guess if I might, we could turn to Katie here in a second. But for my purposes, not so important for today, considering we have a list of folks and projects, but when it comes to our match conversation from the previous session and how that actually worked out in real time, not just with the individual, but we had talked in the beginning that it had extended the timeline from them getting shovel to ground, as it were. I would like to take some time. I think we've set aside about 4 days to go over House Bill 12, give or take. I'd like to set aside a little bit of that time to go over each of those projects, what happened to them, where they're at, and have a little bit more of a deep dive specifically on that part, since it was, you know, us doing it in the middle of a legislative session, which, you know, a good pros and cons, as it were, right? And I'm not entirely sure that I want to do that while I have a group of individuals looking to testify at a committee on individual projects. I think that the committee might want a little bit more time to dive down, and it seems like we could use a little bit more information and specifics to have that deep dive. So if it's okay with members of the committee, let's get a little bit of time. And then, Katie, did you have something for us before we move on?
Mr. Chair, with your permission, Mackenzie Espeland does have the answer to Speaker Regeer's question.
Perfect. Oh, you're fine.
So, Representative Regeer, I think there's a typo on the presentation. I think the math was done by the total project cost, not the grant request, which is what they would be judged on. And so they requested $160,000. Their budget shows a $35,000 match, so they're at about 22%. So that's just a little bit. And we'll have to look at our presentation, and I'm wondering if that might have happened some. Right. Yeah, not the actual requirement for that person. But when we go individually into the projects, project by project, in that one page of the governor's book, you'll be able to see the exact match they're providing with the request and the total project cost.
Excellent. And then can we grab the name and spelling for the record while you're up there? Apologies.
No worries. Mackenzie Espeland, Espeland, and then Mackenzie, Mackenzie. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And then Katie, really fast.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you look at this table that I passed out earlier, it's entitled, and I apologize for the very small print, Montana Historic Preservation Grant Program, HB 12 2025 Biennium Proposed. It has the project description, applicant type, total project cost, and grants proposed. So that would be another place to look at the match. So for the nonprofits, for-profits, you're looking at the percent of grants proposed. For government entities, you're going to look at the total project cost to find your 20% match.
Thank you. Further questions, comments from members of the committee? Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Katie, what number are we looking at here on this sheet then? And that's the other thing I would recommend to the Commerce. When you print this, please put page number on that. When someone wants a reference, we have to sort through all this. But tell me what page is on that.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Lang, it's in this separate handout. It is not part of the Commerce presentation. If you were looking for the specific number for the example that Speaker Regeer brought up, I looked at the Ringling Church. So their total project cost was $170,128. Their grant proposed is $141,773. 20% of $141,773 is $28,355. So if you add the grant plus the match, it totals to the $170,128.
Number six.
Yes, correct, Senator Ling. Sorry, that is number six, Ringling Church.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion, Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question for the agency based on the speaker's question relative to match. When do the applicants have to have their match in hand? Do they have to have that in when they write the grant, or just simply prior to when contracts would be let?
Chair Hopkins, Representative Tuss, so they have to have that match by the time they've contracted. So that's part of the startup requirements.
Further questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, I think we are good to move forward.
Okay, so next we're going to go over the three 2023 biennium projects that have not yet met startup conditions or requirements. So the first one is the Blaine County Museum. Let me just grab my talking points here. So the status is it's not yet contracted. The applicant is no longer moving forward with the original proposed scope due to a feasibility study showing that the project and use of the museum building for the long term is no longer possible or cost effective. And we did receive written testimony from the Blaine County Commissioners. That's in your packet. For that, Mackenzie's going to hand out right now. The second project is the People's Center in Pablo, and this project is also not yet contracted. The applicant was reassessing overall project strategy, timeline, and budget in order to determine and prioritize next project steps and needs after a fire took place at the People's Center in 2020. And I do believe that we have a project representative on Zoom, Marie Torishan.
All right, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of Three Chiefs Cultural Center. The People's Center had applied for the MHPG funding in early 2020 and was awarded the funds of $50,600 in May of 2021. The grant that we applied for would help our building become compliant in American Disabilities Act, allowing the handicapped to be able to access our building more securely with updated doors, electric doors to get in and out of the building. Also to upgrade our security system, replace the HVAC system, and install an individual water well for the facility. The People Center was established in the fall of 1990, opened our doors to the public in 1995, and has operated as a museum, gift shop, cultural center, and representing the Confederate Salish and Kootenai tribes, a place to tell our stories, our histories, share our traditions with anybody that wanted to come through our doors and visit us. Unfortunately, September 6, 2020, our building was burnt by arson fire, and we lost most of the contents in that fire, and we have been rebuilding ever since, rebuilding the collections, that is. You know, we lost a majority of the collections in that fire, the building itself, and we've been temporarily renting a facility in St. Ignatius to continue doing business with the people, telling our stories, sharing our histories, and moving forward with trying to rebuild Three Chiefs Cultural Center. We did rebrand our center after the fire. We felt that it was an opportunity to rebrand our center and rename from the People Center to Three Chiefs Cultural Center, a name that honors the three chiefs of our tribes. And I lost my train of thought, and I apologize for that. We are extremely pleased to be awarded the funds to help us at the People Center. And we did submit a letter from our chairman, our chairwoman, client at the time, to request to restructure the funds that were coming in to help us with an architectural design of a new facility, that we would still follow through with the initial intention of the grant, getting a new facility, and that was approved. That approval came through, so we've been working on that with the tribes, and I know that they're working to be successful in rebuilding our new facility. So at this point, we haven't moved forward with using the funds. Everything's still in a planning process. The project change is to hire a qualified architect to design a new facility. It's important that we get a qualified architect that knows and understands museum needs. So the grant award would help us to meet those. The economic impact would still meet the original submission by creating jobs to increase tourism, not only for the state of Montana and the people that live here, but from visitors from all over the United States and other countries. So we are honored to be a part of this, and we thank the legislature and the MHPG for the funding. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate the time this morning. Are there any questions or comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you for the time this morning. We appreciate it.
So the third project that hasn't met startup is the O'Fallon Historical Museum in Baker. This project was withdrawn due to a necessary increase in scope and project cost of over $1 million. The applicants have decided not to move forward with the project, so we don't have anyone here today and no testimony on that one.
Before we move forward to the third, does anybody have any questions? All right.
Okay, so next I'd like to give you just a real brief overview of our 2025 biennium project, so starting to look forward. So this is a similar dashboard to what you saw for the 2023 biennium projects. So we received 48 applications requesting a total of $4.1 million. We're recommending 29 of those projects for funding at $8.5 million. So you can see that the amount leveraged for every dollar of MHPG funds has increased from the last round. As far as the breakdown of types of applicants, we still saw a majority of applicants in the nonprofit type, also for-profit and government types. And then as far as type of project, we're still seeing most of the applications come in for historic sites. So as far as the list, you are going to notice that there are ties on the list. So for example, let me see where our first tie is here. So number 8, there's two number 8s that you can see, and it's just because we score out of a total of 1,100 points, and so sometimes we just end up with projects that are tied. So you can see that because we have 2 8s, we skipped over the number 9, so the next number there is 10. Commerce provided one list of all 48 project applications in ranked order, as Katie mentioned, for inclusion into the governor's budget. The governor's budget recommends projects up to the revenue amount projected to be received in the Historic Preservation Grant account for the 2025 biennium. Projects numbered 1 through 29 are recommended for funding for a total appropriation of about $8.5 million. The project recommendations in the governor's budget are advisory to the legislature. The legislature makes the final decision on funding awards and makes the necessary appropriations for these grants. And with that summary, I'd like to move into individual projects.
That sounds excellent. Thank you very much.
So I would recommend that as we're walking through, we're just going to take a logistical moment here to talk about all this stuff that you have in front of you. So I would grab the governor's 2025 biennium executive budget. This is volume 8. So this is the bound book. And let's open up to page 10. And this is nice to look at because it gives you all of the details of the project in one page. And then as we move along, I'm going to go through the slideshow up on the screen. And really the best part of the slideshow is the photo, just to give you that visual. And I appreciate Senator Lang the comment about page numbers. We will fix that. It's a great comment. Okay, so I'm going to get all my stuff ready here. We'll jump in. Okay, so project number 1, which is on page 10 of the governor's book, is the Harloton Roundhouse in Harloton. And the project proposes to repair the exterior walls, windows, and doors to insulate the historic Milwaukee Roads Harloton Roundhouse. This is one of only 12 remaining roundhouses in the country. The project will secure the building against water intrusion and vandalism and allow the roundhouse to be open to the public. And I'm just going to give really short presentations so that you can actually hear from the folks that are here representing the project. So we do have, I believe, Mayor Paul Otten that is here to talk about this project.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee.
Good morning.
With your permission, I do have a handout that I'd like to give out to the committee.
Please.
My name is Paul Otten, spelled O-T-T-E-N, and I am the mayor of the city of Harloton. Jason Seiler is here with the DEQ Brownfield coordinator and is also here to provide support and can answer any questions regarding past and future work planned at this site. We are here today to request you that your committee fully fund the city's grant application to restore and preserve the city's historic Milwaukee Road Roundhouse. Milwaukee Railroad Rail Yard and Roundhouse was operated as a railroad and repair and refueling depot from 1900 to 1979. In 1985, the city of Harloton acquired the property for a dollar after the Milwaukee Road declared bankruptcy. This bankruptcy eliminated the town's largest employer, and its impact on jobs and the economy is still felt 40 years later. For many years, the thought of addressing the diesel and asbestos contamination at the 180-acre rail yard and the 17,000-square-foot roundhouse was beyond daunting. This all changed in 2015 when DEQ and Snowy Mountain Development Corporation began assisting the city with grant applications to address the contamination at the rail yard and abate the asbestos within their historic roundhouse. This project we are requesting funding for today will help preserve what is left of the last remaining Milwaukee Road roundhouse in Montana, and one of only 12 wooden roundhouses remaining in the country. If the roundhouse is not preserved, the grandeur and the importance of the Milwaukee Road to Harloton and Montana will be lost forever. The preservation and restoration of the Harloton Roundhouse can be broken down into three phases. Abate the asbestos found within the roundhouse. This large expense is being covered by Brownsfield grants from Snowy Mountain Development Corporation, DEQ, and the EPA. Secure the building against water intrusion and vandalism. Repair the exterior walls, windows, and doors to properly insulate and provide a weather-tight enclosure so the roundhouse could be open to the public. As part of its long-term planning effort, the city, with the help of DEQ, EPA, and Snowy Mountain Development Corporation, has held over 10 public listening sessions and developed a redevelopment concept plan for both the 180-acre rail yard and the historic roundhouse. In addition, a feasibility study for using the roundhouse as an extension of the depot museum and developing it into a community event center was completed last year. These planning efforts highlight the community's support and ensures the restoration and redevelopment of the roundhouse will be a success. Funding the city's grant application will assist in the transformation of the historic railroad district to once again provide economic stimulus and a brighter future for the city. Thank you for your time. I would gladly answer any questions at this time.
Well, thank you, Mayor. We certainly appreciate it. Do we have any questions or comments from members of the committee?
Okay. Thank
you
very
much. I
would
say this was pretty thorough, and we certainly appreciate it. So thank you, sir. We appreciate your time this morning.
The number two project is the Fort Peck Theater. The proposal is to update heating, cooling, and ventilation to be able to keep the 1934 theater open year-round rather than just seasonally. The building has hosted many performances over the last 50 years, and these upgrades could open the theater to even more entertainment and activities beyond the 14 weeks of the year, and as the only performing arts center within a 300-mile radius, provides a much-needed amenity to the region. We weren't able to get in touch with anybody on this one, so I don't believe we have anybody online or in the room.
As we play musical chairs. So that's perfectly fine and really fast. Before we move on, did we have any questions, comments, anything we wanted to grab on that? And then...
What kind of comments can I make, Mr. Chair? I live out there in that part of the world, and I've been to the Fort Peck Theater quite a bit, and it is a phenomenal day when every production that they have, it just it sells out all summer, and yet there's just a lot of with this proposal they could do a little more, and you know, we have some beautiful fall weather in eastern Montana, but the facility is not fitted for that, and this would just help a lot to make it go and be more usable and more productions be offered at that facility.
I think that does pretty well, Senator Lang. Do we have any further questions, comments? Seeing none, I think we're good to move forward.
Number three, which can be found on page 12 of the governor's book, is the Baker State Bank building. So the proposal is to replace the roof. The Baker State Building in downtown Baker is being rehabilitated in phases to house the offices for the Southeastern Montana Area Revitalization Team and Baker Chamber of Commerce, along with a business incubator and three units of workforce housing. And I believe we do have a project representative on Zoom, Vaughn Zenko.
Excellent. Well, good morning.
Hi, Vaughn Zenko, that's V-A-U-G-H-N-Z-E-N-K-O, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to be able to come here and speak about a project here today. The old Baker State Bank building, right on Main Street in Baker, it's the second oldest brick building in Baker, and really the only remaining structure in town that still retains the characteristics that it had when it was built back in 1909 originally. It's right at the intersection of two major highways, Highway 12 and Highway 7. So it's become something of a landmark building in Baker. And there's not a person in this town who doesn't have some sort of connection to this building in one way or another. It's been, it was at one point, obviously a bank. It's been county offices, county corners. There's a lot that's been going on with this building over the years, but it sat unused and it fallen into disrepair recently. Our organization, SMART, we bought the vacant building in 2020 with the goal of really saving the last remaining monument to Baker's past. This kind of hit home for us after we made an effort back in 2006 to try to save the historic Baker Hotel. That did not work. That building itself is actually on the National Historic Registry, and it still wound up being torn down. So this is a very personal building for folks in Baker to try to save this state bank building. Since that purchase, we were able to get Brownfields grants to clear the building of asbestos and lead paint. And what was a dilapidated relic of the past, we've now kind of turned into, we've been able to do a little work on the main floor. And it's we've got a small business operating there. It's kind of become a thriving hub right in the heart of downtown Baker. There's three brand new locally owned businesses there. One that's selling regional Montana products on consignment, as well as helping drive traffic to the entire downtown business district, along with the plans for future offices of both our economic development organization and the Baker Chamber of Commerce. And we also intend to reimagine the second story of this building as affordable housing for workforce and for potentially seniors. However, the big thing looming literally over this entire project is that roof, which has fallen into such disrepair The previous owner of the building doesn't remember the last time it was worked on, so it's at least 40 years since that roof had been handled. And that is, we were able to do some nice work to the main floor, but that was beyond our budget. So the funding provided by this grant not only allows to save this historic gem in downtown Baker, but also ensure the long-term health of property and give us the opportunity to address the critical housing shortage in the community. And really create a shiny example of mixed-use property by utilizing that second story right in the downtown commerce section generated by that main level. Just I want to say again, I'm here to ask that to fully fund our project. And there's just great swaths of Montana history that continue to be lost, especially in rural communities like ours. Despite our best efforts to try to save buildings like this, we lost our Baker Hotel back in 2006. And we strongly encourage this committee to continue funding this important grant and support projects like ours, the Baker State Bank building, that are crucial not only to our community in Baker, but really to the history of Montana. So, thank you all for your time.
Hey, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it. Let me check and if we have any questions from members of the committee. Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the agency, this is obviously a good project, but could you once again go through the match? You know, it's hard to see 18% up there when we know 20% is a requirement.
Right. Chair Hopkins, Representative Tuss, I'm glad that you just asked that. And I apologize for the confusion. What we put on here is the total project match, but that doesn't work for this project because the requirement is actually 20% of the amount requested because it's a for-profit. So if we do the math, they are providing $35,000. So if you take $35,000 and divide that by $160,000, you get a 22% match. So I just talked to Mackenzie. We're going to update all the slides because it sounds like you're going to have a conversation about this later, and we'll add the page numbers, and that will set you up for success later.
Absolutely, and thank you, and I appreciate the apologies, but as I remember it, that is mostly our fault for choosing to distinguish between.
It is confusing,
yeah. So I appreciate it, but apologies to you as well. And that being said, if there are no more questions from the committee, I think we are going to move forward.
Okay, number four. So this is on page 13 of the governor's book. The Petroleum County Courthouse in Winnett. The proposal is rehabilitation and adaptive reuse of the Petroleum County Courthouse to create four apartments and five office spaces on the underutilized second floor. The project will include replacing the roof, adding an elevator, adding a fire suppression system, improving the fire escape, and replacing windows. And we do have County Commissioner Sig Pugrud in the audience here today to give us some testimony.
Excellent. Well, good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning, Chair and Committee. I have some handouts here if I can give
Please.
Those to the committee. Thank you for considering this idea. We are excited that Petroleum County Courthouse Rehabilitation Program was ranked number four in the Department of Commerce rankings. This funding will assist with the rehabilitation of the courthouse, which is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Our primary purpose is to ensure the sustainability of our courthouse. Additionally, we want to adapt unused portions into affordable housing and commercial office spaces. Our current cost estimate is for this project is over $1.6 million. In the past couple of years, we have raised $600,000 from CDBG, $400,000 from a historic tax credit investor, $35,000 from Steel Reese Grant, $10,000 from Central Montana Foundation Grant, $10,000 from the Gianforte Family Foundation grant. This $498,720 grant that we've requested that you fully fund will really give us the final cornerstone to making this project fly. These funds were requested, as stated, towards replacing the roof, installing an elevator that will serve all three floors, replacing the fire escape, improving energy efficiency with new windows, and installing fire suppression throughout the building. We encourage you to support the funding to preserve our courthouse as well as to breathe new life into the county with new opportunities. When finished, the deferred maintenance issues will be gone, giving us a solid, energy-efficient courthouse able to offer fresh, affordable housing. The school, as well as the conservation district, are both looking at the ideas of using that housing as potential stimulation for getting in new teachers or part-time people that work on conservation projects. We also look forward to the economic development opportunities for businesses that are looking for office spaces. Frankly, the five office spaces as well as one of the four apartments have already been spoken for. This is historical preservation and economic development in one package. Petroleum County and the state both will benefit from this. And best of all, we preserve this beautiful old building. And we even get to go back and make it look a bit better than it does at this point. We ask you to fully fund this grant and really do appreciate the time you're putting into considering it. And on a local level, it's stated that we're kind of looking forward to a time when there's more humans than occupy that upstairs and bats. So we thank you for your time. Are there any questions I could answer?
Thank you, Commissioner. And do we have any questions from the committee? Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not a question, but a comment. I want to commend you for awarding this project $600,000 in CDBG funding. I do know that every community in this state has other priorities, and so bringing that type of match to this committee shows your deep commitment to this project. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tuss. Seeing no further questions, we thank you for your time here this morning, Commissioner. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Number 5 on page 14 of the governor's book is the Milligan Building in Miles City. The proposal is restoration of the windows, doors, ceiling, floors, and facade, and rebuilding of the storefront in a historically accurate manner for this building. This is one phase in a $13.2 million project that will rehabilitate the structure into a community health center, filling a gap in health services in eastern Montana and fostering economic development in a blighted area of downtown. And we do have David Mark, I believe, available on Zoom.
Excellent.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is David Mark, and I'm the CEO of the Bighorn Valley Health Center, doing business as One Health. We are one of Montana's 14 community health centers, and we recently purchased this Milligan building in downtown Miles City. The building is 26,800 square feet, has three floors, and uses 60 feet of frontage on Main Street. It's a primary contributing structure in the Miles City Main Street Historic District and is documented in the National Register of Historic Places. Over the course of multi-phase projects, we intend to rehabilitate the Milligan building to become a clinical facility that will incorporate a telemedicine hub for delivery of care throughout the region, a multidisciplinary clinical training program, along with a site for integrated primary and preventative healthcare services. This would include medical, dental, behavioral health, and pharmacy. And finally, we will be co-locating the Custer County Public Health within that space. The project does anticipate the creation of 10 new jobs, retention of 36 existing jobs in the. This overall $13.2 million project does comprise the complete rehabilitation of the Milligan building, but the MHPG funds would only be requested for the following work: restoration of the original wooden windows, restoring and tuck pointing the brick facade on each of the sides, demolishing the slip cover on the first floor storefront, restoring the first floor storefront in a historically accurate manner, and restoring the hardwood floors, wood panel doors, metal ceiling inside. We do urge your full support for this project, as we feel that it does adhere to the statutory criteria. It supports economic activity by creating numerous jobs for Montana contractors and service workers, and stimulates economic development in Miles City by revitalizing the town. It addresses multiple maintenance issues with the facade, windows, doors, floors, and ceilings to preserve this historically significant characteristics of this historic site. The project can be completed without delay. We do have a pretty robust timeline, including access to matching funds and the permitting process. It contributes to historical significance of both the site, which has a pretty colorful history, which included the hosting of Gene Autry during his Miles City bucking horse sale, and the building itself, which is a structure that dates back to 1897 and marks the transition into the Renaissance revival. Our team does have a track record of success. We completed a timely and cost-effective project, $8.6 million historic preservation, similar project in Lewistown this past summer. And finally, it does foster ongoing economic benefit to the state by the creation of jobs and activating this unused space within Miles City downtown, incentivize further redevelopment in the area. Since the submitting our application, we have made considerable progress with the project. We finalized a $6.3 million contribution to the project from the USDA and are nearly complete with the schematic design phase of the technical plans. We are deeply grateful for your consideration of our project. Trust that it will adhere to and further the goals of the Montana Historic Preservation Grant Program. So I do thank you for your time, and happy to answer any questions that folks might have.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. And are there any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, again, thank you for your time this morning, sir. Appreciate it.
Number 6 is on page 15 of the governor's book. This is the Ringling Church. The proposal is to install a new roof and list the building on the National Register of Historic Places. The Ringling Church is undergoing extensive renovation by a group of community members so that it can serve as a community and event center to increase tourism and events in the area. And this is one of our ones where the match looks funky because it's showing match for the total project, and it actually should show match for just the amount requested. So the match is $28,000. So if we divide that by the amount requested of $141,000, we get 20%. So we do have Judy Berg in person today to talk more about this project.
Excellent. Well, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Judy Berg, Judy with a Y and B-E-R-G. I am one of the partners in this organization that has purchased the Ringling Church. We were given an opportunity to do this in 2021. First and foremost, I would like to express my appreciation for the opportunity to apply for these funds as a for-profit organization. That's very unusual. Believe me, even though we are categorized as for-profit, we are not for-profit. We're definitely not making any money at this point, but we certainly have an opportunity to do so in the future. When we purchased the Ringling Church, it was a vacant space in the front sanctuary part. There is a one-bedroom apartment in the back that has been finished. We've done some finalized touching up of that, and it is a rentable space at this point. In the front part of the church, this is not grant-related, but we started in on some of our Phase 1 projects. We've done some framing, structural support of that front wall so it didn't tip over in the wind. We restored the original floors, which were original wood floors. We added insulation, electrical service, plumbing, including an ADA accessible restroom. We've done drywall painting. We did some bathroom hallway and tile, kitchen flooring, and appliances to make a little catering type area, excuse me, in the sanctuary area. Excuse me. We've added some lighting fixtures and an HVAC system with some installation of that. And one of the most exciting things we've done most recently is to restore the original stained glass windows. In the picture that you can see where there's that little archway above the main door, there are actually three windows there that have not seen the light of day for 60 years. And we used a stained glass specialist out of Butte and a local wood craftsman from White Sulphur Springs to do that work. We have all but one window installed, and they're just waiting for the weather to break a little bit to finish that last one. Having done those projects, what we are applying for this grant is to re-roof the church. Obviously, anything we do below is for naught if we don't have a good roof on the place. We chose the roof as the project because it is necessary, but not in dire need. The roof was replaced in 1998, so it's nearing the end of its life. We've had some patching done off and to get a new roof on there will absolutely restore the structure to its glory. It's a wonderful place. I encourage anybody that goes up the Highway 89 to take a look at it. And if you want a tour, give me a call. It's turned into a beautiful space. We've had a music video was shot in there before any of the restoration work was done. We had a wedding there this summer before the work was completed, and it was beautiful. And then we have a group that's coming in February to have a small group meeting there. So we're already working on the rental of the space, which interestingly will feed back into the accommodations tax, so we'll be able to be contributing to the very fund for which we're receiving this money. We are so grateful for this opportunity and encourage your full funding, of course. The team of people that is working on this project, most of us live in the White Sulphur and Ringling area. We do have one member that lives in Livingston. Everybody has a great tie to Montana. We want to preserve this historic space, add some cultural value. Certainly, we're using local craftsmen and artisans as we can to do the restoration work. And we just appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you for allowing us to share our excitement for this project.
Well, thank you. We appreciate the time this morning. Are there questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again for your time.
The one last comment I would make.
Please.
The previous grant applicants had a Ringling component. That is a different project than this, just so that you're aware that Ringling doesn't come up in conversation very often, and for you to have two Ringling-related projects, one is for the Ringling Mansion, which is in White Sulphur Springs, and this is for the Ringling Church in Ringling, Montana. Thank you.
We appreciate the distinction.
Number 7 on page 16 of the Governor's Book, the National Museum of Forest Service History in Missoula. The proposal is installation of security and fire suppression systems, climate control, and storage in the repository for the 50,000 items in the collections at the Conservation Legacy Center. This center is a new $10.6 million museum that tells the story of the country's conservation legacy and is anticipated to attract between 80 to 100,000 non-resident visitors each year. And Lisa Tate is available on Zoom.
Excellent. Well, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Lisa Tate, L-I-S-A-T-A-T-E, and I am the Executive Director for the National Museum of Forest Service History. And I'd like to start by just explaining a little bit about our organization. We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization that is independent and completely separate from the Forest Service. The Forest Service is in our name because we were started 30 years ago by a state forester and historian that was concerned that the conservation history of the United States, and specifically of the Forest Service, was not being preserved. So Our organization has been working for over 30 years, actually, on a 31-acre campus located 1 mile west of the Missoula International Airport, where we currently have a visitor center and a forest discovery trail, an amphitheater, and other outdoor amenities. Our organization works with other museums around the country to curate exhibits. We work with the Library of Congress to host teacher workshops here in Montana every year. And we also do a number of events. And we currently have traveling exhibits and virtual exhibits. Our mining and minerals exhibit has been traveling coast to coast for over 10 years now. So we have a very strong track record of utilizing our collection in a variety of different ways. We have been working on a capital campaign for the last several years to build the National Conservation Legacy Center here in Missoula. This is a mass timber building that will be an exhibit in and of itself, utilizing mass timber and other innovative wood products. And we have a number of different forest products partners from Montana whose products will be showcased in this building. We've also been working with a world-class exhibition design firm to be able to bring a truly unique experience to our region. And we have a very robust exhibition program which features immersion and participatory exhibits. There will be nothing like this world-class facility between here and Seattle. So we intend to be a destination for the region, and we anticipate 80 to 100,000 annual visitors every year. Once this building is constructed, we will have 13 to 15 new full-time positions that we will be opening. But really, the collection of the museum is the highlight for this funding. We have over 50,000 historic items. We have artifacts. We have photographs. We have archival documents, many of which are one of a kind and very unique and very important to the conservation history of not only Montana, but also of our country. Our collection is currently housed where our offices are located in Midtown Missoula, and this is a temporary facility. It does not have the proper environmental controls that we will be liking to provide in the National Conservation Legacy Center. Our capital campaign is nearly complete, but it does not involve the funding necessary for the appropriate fire suppression, environmental controls, and storage systems for our important collection. Our timeline is to finish the construction documents this spring. We have completed our schematic design work with both the architecture and the exhibit design features. We will be starting construction later this year with an opening date in late 2024 or 2025. I am happy to answer any questions that you have. And also, if any of you are interested after these hearings, I have a wonderful fly-through that I would be happy to share with you of the building and the exhibit walkthrough.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And we check for questions and comments from members of the committee. Seeing none, thank you again. You had me at timber, so.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Tuss.
Sorry about this. I believe that Representative Carlin is here to speak in favor of this, if that's appropriate.
Representative Carlin, was this the project, or was it the...
On the Forest Service history, would I be able to briefly add on?
Oh, you absolutely can. Yes, please. Apologies. I figured because you didn't come up that you were waiting for the other one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Carlin, K-A-R-L-E-N, represent House District 96, which is Western Missoula, Frenchtown, and Huson, and it's the district where the Museum of Forest Service History is located. I just wanted to express my strongest support for a historic preservation grant. And I've had the opportunity to witness the capital campaign that they have been running, and it's really incredible what they have planned. And I just wanted to touch on some of the community impacts that funding a historic preservation grant for the museum would bring. You know, right now it's a 31-acre facility campus, and this isn't a part of Missoula County that's rapidly growing. It's absorbing a lot of the housing needs, frankly, in Missoula. And with that, we've had challenges when it comes to cultural spaces, community spaces, open lands, and I think that this project is really unique in that, in addition to being, you know, we heard 80,000 visitors, we're also going to see that for residents, for Montanans in Western Missoula County, this is going to be a space that everybody can use. And I think that that's a really unique aspect of this project. And with those visitors, we're also seeing a lot of economic development in this area of Missoula County. And so I know that this is going to support current businesses as well as restaurants, shops, new businesses that are interested in coming into Missoula County. We're going to see an area for a lot of exciting economic development. And so I guess in closing, I just want to express my strongest support for the project and happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlin. One, thanks for actually taking the time to stay with us in order. Usually when representatives have to or want to testify in front of the subcommittee and have regular work in the regular committees, we just let them come up and make sure that we can capture their testimony and then send them on their way to our business. I appreciate you being willing to wait and keep the order for the day. And we now release you back to your work on business and labor, I understand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Project 8 on page 17 of the governor's book, the historic Teslow Grain Elevator in Livingston. This project ranked 8th for a tie on the list. The proposal is to complete structural reinforcement to the foundation and wooden walls, install exterior insulation, add 2 additional floors and code-compliant stairs as part of a larger commercial reuse of the historic grain elevator. The redevelopment of the structure will activate commercial lease space and a museum facility that will provide a sustainable revenue source for future preservation needs. And we have Josh Olson on Zoom.
Excellent. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak this morning. So I'd like to start with a little bit of background on this building. Anyone who's driven through Livingston on Highway 89 will have seen the Teslow Grain Elevator sort of standing tall on the city skyline. It really is the largest monument in Livingston and sort of a landmark of the town. It really recalls the history of this area as an agricultural and railroad center. But it's been out of service since the 80s. It was built, we're not entirely clear what year, but almost 210 years ago. And served a functional purpose in town for many decades and centuries, but has been out of service for a long time. In 2016, one of Livingston's famous windstorms ripped the roof off, which landed on a railroad, which they were not happy about. And the existing owner at the time began a process of tearing it down, which is what usually happens with these old wooden grain elevators when they've gone out of service. A group of local citizens at that time, recognizing the importance of the building, got together and over the weekend managed to raise enough money to purchase the building from the developer, halt the destruction, and actually hire the crew that was deconstructing the building to repair it. And they managed to repair the roof, and they managed to get a grant from Snowy Mountain to do an environmental cleanup. And they engaged with Preserve Montana to do a really innovative study on what could possibly be done with this building in terms of reuse. And that's right about when I got involved. For 2 years, I spent time with them really looking into what we could do with this building to not only restore it, but actually put it onto a viable and sustainable path so that it wouldn't be at risk any longer. These buildings are amazing. They are purpose-built machines. They are 70-foot tall, 60-foot wide machines built to move grain from down low to up high and sort it and then deposit it into railroad cars. Unfortunately, it doesn't have a use in that manner anymore. And so what we're looking at doing is converting it into commercial space for the community. And the focus of our organization, of Project 49, is to make sure that we are able to provide affordable space for the community. Livingston has felt the pressure that all of Montana has felt with increasing rental rates. And because we're a small community hemmed in by the railroad and the mountains, we don't have a lot of excess capacity. And small business owners, nonprofits, educational organizations have really felt the pinch of not being able to afford commercial space in Livingston. And so economic development is being constrained due to the lack of available space. So our vision is to take this building, do a really ambitious reuse and reconversion of it into commercial space that we can then provide to organizations in the community to start businesses, to run their nonprofits, to do kids' activity spaces for the wintertime at an affordable cost. And I think that's key to what we're trying to do here. It is really getting really expensive in Livingston and very hard for folks to afford space here. And so not only is this a amazing historical representation of what Livingston is and was, but it can be part of Livingston's redevelopment and be reintegrated in a really useful way to the community again. The community is very excited about it. We have any number of people coming up to me weekly asking when it's going to be open, when they can start a business in there, when they can use the space. And so, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of a really nice effort prior to us. They raised over $300,000 from community members to do that repair work and to do that important study. And our goal is to stand on their shoulders and take it to the next phase and really create a structure that is viable and safe and useful again for the community. And we thank you for considering our proposal. This tranche of funds will really stabilize the structure. We'll provide insulation. It'll structurally stabilize it so the wind is not going to do any more damage and create a nice, warm, safe commercial space that other folks can come in and take their vision and reuse. And I appreciate your time and open any questions. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your time. And are there any questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again, sir.
Thank you.
Tied for number 8 on page 18 of the governor's book is the A.D. Whitcomb Garage in Red Lodge. The proposal is to upgrade the electrical system for code compliance, plaster wall repair and painting, window and exterior door replacement. This structure houses and exhibits pre-World War II buses and vehicles used in Yellowstone National Park, and attracted visitors from over 43 states and 3 foreign countries in 2021. And we do have David Whitcomb on Zoom.
Excellent. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is David Whitcomb, and I'm a director for the Buses of Yellowstone Preservation Trust located in Red Lodge, Montana. And good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. I am the grandson of the man who built the garage we are in the process of restoring. I'm testifying based on behalf of our Montana Historic Preservation Grant application requesting funding for the A.D. Whitcomb Garage Interior Restoration Project. The history of the garage dates back to 1905, when a one-story blacksmith and wheelwright shop was built on the lot. In 1917, as automobiles began to replace the horse-drawn transport, the shop became a service station. In 1925, my grandfather, A.D. Whitcomb, and his brother purchased the building and continued operating it as a service station, tire, and blacksmith shop. In 1928, my grandfather became the sole owner of the building, demolishing it in 1936 and building a more modern-style service station and auto dealership. He remained in business until 1976 when the business was sold. Buses of Yellowstone Preservation Trust purchased the building in 2018. Today, it is recognized as the site of one of the longest continuously operating service stations in Montana and a contributing property to the Red Lodge Historic Commercial District listed in the National Register of Historic Places. How fitting, too, that the building with its long tradition of transportation-related businesses would be the home of the Buses of Yellowstone Preservation Trust and their original operating motor vehicles used in Yellowstone Park prior to World War II. What a remarkable meld of the past. I spent many summers working at the garage watching my grandfather, along with my father and uncle, interacting with their customers, doing whatever needed to be done. A strong work ethic and a dedicated commitment to serving the community guided their way, a legacy that carries on to this day, and one we, Buses of Yellowstone Preservation Trust, continue to follow. I know their hearts would be warm as they viewed our efforts to restore and preserve the building. Beginning with the exterior stucco in 1921, made possible through grants received from the Montana Department of Tourism and Montana History Foundation, they would readily recognize the need for similar efforts in the building interior, specifically those that would address code compliance requirements and energy efficient needs. How pleased they would be the building's restoration is being guided by an architectural assessment performed by a preservation architect in early 2020. They believed, as we do, that a well-planned approach is essential to getting a job done and getting it done right. The use of local suppliers and contractors to do work was one of their fundamental values, as they strongly believe in community and employing locally. We too will use local suppliers and contractors with historic preservation experience to perform the interior restoration work, the same approach used when restoring the building exterior stucco. They would be astounded to know that in 2022, over 1,000 visitors from 41 states and 13 countries abroad toured their building with the historic vehicle showcased therein. How wonderful, too, that the Montana Historical Society's 49th Annual History Conference held an open house in the building, enabling over 275 people from across the United States to experience the sights, smells, and sounds of a 1936-built garage. To know the history of the garage and its vehicles was being shared through the media, exhibits, presentations, and more to reach a worldwide audience of tens of thousands would have been beyond their belief. To hear that over 10,000 people are following the Buses of Yellowstone Preservation Trust on social media, with a far-reaching exceeding 200,000 people worldwide, would have been more than they could have comprehended. Yet they would understand the significance of the numbers as they show a great interest in our mission of preservation. How proud they would be to see their legacy live on through a building they built now, used to showcase historic vehicles used in Yellowstone during the same era the garage was built. How proud I am to be before you today to share their story, and thank you for your consideration in providing grant funding for the A.D. Whitcomb Garage Interior Restoration Project. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your time here this morning, sir. And we'd ask for questions, comments from members of the committee. Seeing none, again, thank you very much for your time, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Chair Hopkins, we also have written testimony for this project that Mackenzie will pass around. I'm going to keep us moving here while that's circulating. Number 10 on page 19 of the governor's book is the Haver Beneath the Streets project. The proposal is to remove and replace the sidewalk, interior wall, lighting, security system, and handicap stairlift in the vaulted sidewalk, to reopen a portion of Haver Beneath the Streets. Haver Beneath the Streets is a museum in downtown Haver that welcomes around 10,000 visitors per year. It's an important tourism and historic asset on the High Line. So we have Christy Owens or Jerry Waltari in the room.
Good morning. Thank you to the committee and for this opportunity to be here. I am Christy Owens, O-W-E-N-S. I am the office manager at Haver Beneath the Streets. I have been the office manager there for close to 25 years. I'm becoming a museum artifact, I like to say at times. So, yes, in a nutshell, what is Haver Beneath the Streets? If you've never had the opportunity to come and see us, it is a historical tour, geared around the 1880s to the 1930s. We take you down through the businesses, giving the history behind it, and how it all got started. One of the reasons that we're down there is in 1904, there was a fire that burned the downtown area, devastating at least four city blocks and nearly 60 businesses. This is a one-hour tour that highlights Havre's history and the surrounding area. And you would basically be walking back in time and seeing the displays, some of them in their original locations. We have over 19 different displays, you know, highlighting the Sporting Eagle Saloon, a bordello, blacksmith shop, and Boone's Drug, as you see on the picture above there. As we start off our tour, we enter in on the 2nd Avenue side of the block, which is the sidewalk that's affected. Passing down, going in there through our original passageway, which is actually the vaulted ceiling, vaulted sidewalk. You are underneath the sidewalk itself. Seeing a lot of the original masonry work that's been done on the foundation of the Eagles Club. We highlight that. You see all of that as well. Time has not been on our side. Over time, the concrete has eroded, and we've started to get water receding into that area. Unfortunately, in 2017, we felt the need to move out of the area for public safety, as well as our motor service display, mercantile, and dentist shop was affected as well. This project as a whole is to replace the sidewalk, as mentioned, and the interior walls as well. Something similar to what was done by the state on 3rd Avenue in approximately 2008. This project, the importance of it is the history. You know, we would lose our architectural designs, viewing that as well. And one of the other main things that we would lose would be our accessibility of our stairlift. At this time, we're not able to access that. So those tourists that come to visit us that have troubles negotiating the stairs are unable to come and see us. As well as this would stop the water damage, and ultimately, if we're unable to do this, it will be filled and we will lose that access, as well as seeing the masonry work that is there in the history as well. Overall, this project, economic impact, we do have several people involved on board with this project. We've got an engineer, contractors, you know, we've got our electrician and security system will have to be taken out, put back in, reset up, things like that as well. You know, this will generate income within the town, as well as around the state, with any of those that we may need to bring in to doing the work, getting into our local restaurants and the back to the beds and heads, so to speak. And with that as well, you know, the buzz of the local media, newspaper, radio, the excitement with that as well, people working with that. And we foresee an uptake in tourism as well with this project. They're going to want to know what's happening and what the future holds for us as well. Since filling out our application, just kind of a little bit of an update, in the spring of 2020, we did go in and stabilize the structure with some stanchions for public safety, even though we're not using that area at this time. We've also held a successful fundraiser in May of 2022. Even though we have our matching funds, we're continuing to raise funds for any incurred costs that may happen on the backside of this. Havre Beneath the Streets opened its doors in 1994, and we've had over 230,000 tourists traveling to our establishment, coming in from around the world. One day I had a gentleman pop in from Australia. He geared his whole vacation to come and see us. And I was like, Havre, Montana? Really? Yes, it does happen. With this project, we'll be able to move into that, back into that area, highlighting that area, and be able to show our tourists and let them feel the whole tour and experience itself. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Do you have any other questions? Comments.
And are there questions, comments from members of the committee, Representative Tuss?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I really want to commend my two constituents here from House District 28 and friends of mine for making the six-hour round trip to have their 5 minutes at the microphone. But far more important than that, for their stick-to-itiveness with regard to this. This is a gem for the entire state of Montana, and frankly, it's deteriorating. And without this investment, it will continue to deteriorate. So thank you for your commitment to this project. This is a wonderful project.
Thank you.
Thank you. And all of our projects are fantastic, but I would have to admit this is definitely a personal favorite of mine as well. Are there any other questions, comments from members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, just Senator a comment. She mentioned the person from Australia, but I know there's been lots of people come from Malta, Montana, and the High Line. This is the underground is basically when the railroad was built. Jason, if you're ever on the High Line, you should go up there because there's probably some things downstairs you've never seen before because you're in a modern age, you know, how people took a bath in the old days and those kind of things. So it would be very interesting, and it's just it's part of our culture, and I appreciate Haver for sustaining this project.
Well, thank you, Senator Lang. Jason, do you have a retort? No. All right. With that, I think we are good to move forward.
Ooh, this is not working, Bonnie.
There we go.
Oh, no, I went too far. Okay. Number 11, which is on page 20 of the governor's book, is the Hockaday Museum of Art in Kalispell. So this project ranked 11th for a tie on the list. It's working now. Okay. The proposal is to replace the heating and duct system in the 1904 former Carnegie Library operating in downtown Kalispell as an art museum that offers youth and adult educational programming, classes, and tours. And Alyssa Cordova is on Zoom.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. And for the record, my name is Alyssa Cordova, AlyssaCordova, and I am the director of the Hockaday Museum of Art. I am testifying on behalf of our project to replace the heating and duct system, which is ranked number 11th. I just first of all want to say thank you for this opportunity to testify and to be part of all of these amazing proposed projects for this grant. It's truly an honor, and it's fun for me to learn some more Montana history from these projects. As mentioned, we are in a historic Carnegie Library building, which is on the National Registry of Historic Places. We are very grateful to the city of Kalispell to call this our home. Since 1969, the museum has called this building our home. It's a beautiful building and a wonderful museum. And if you're ever in Kalispell, please contact me. I'd be happy to give you a tour of our facility. This project is an important project, both for now and in the future. Preserving our historic home and replacing our aging furnaces ensures we can remain open for the public, provide important cultural and educational art experiences, and protect the architecture of our building, and safely house and display historic and artistic objects to protect Montana's legacy, history, stories, and culture. The Hockaday has grown to become a premier arts destination in Northwest Montana. We are the only art museum between Missoula and Spokane, so we service a wide area of the region. Our public outreach, in addition to our own community, includes all of Flathead County and its schools, surrounding rural and urban areas, and the tribal communities of the Blackfeet, Pend'oreille, Salish, and Kootenai Nations. This project will have significant and immediate sustained positive economic impact for Montana. It, in addition to allowing us to remain fully operational and offer our year-round arts exhibitions, classes, programs, and events, it will have immediate impact by employing a local contractors and HVAC technicians and labor to finish this project. And it also will allow us to, in turn, continue our operations and support our community partnerships in support of other local small businesses, such as framers, printers, designers, contract artists and musicians, event rental companies, caterers and food trucks, facilities maintenance, and other contractors for our seasonal and daily operations. We host a variety of events throughout the year, and a lot of what we do is directly working with these other local small businesses. This will also increase tourism in our area and revitalize our historic downtown Kalispell. The Kalispell Chamber of Commerce and Discover Kalispell Conventions and Visitors Bureau in their 2020 marketing plan identified museums as one of the top destinations for tourists next to the park in our area. And as we know, our area has experienced exponential growth, and the Glacier National Park has experienced record visitation with 3.31 million visitors in 2021. With the completion of this project, it can allow us to be open year-round and to provide the vital arts and cultural programs for both local and out-of-town visitors. An update on the project. We did in our application mention that we were looking for additional funding with the Northwestern Energy Grant and with the Hartley Foundation for a matching grant. We did not receive the Northwestern Energy Grant, but we did receive the Hartley matching grant. Thank you for your time and consideration and supporting this worthwhile preservation project for Historic Home and Art Museum, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Well, thank you so much for your time. We certainly appreciate it. Are there questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you for the time this morning.
Thank you.
Tied for 11 is the next project on page 21 of the governor's book, the Historical Museum at Fort Missoula. So the proposal is to update the security system, install climate control, construct access for collections movement and processing, and exterior restoration to transform building T203 at Fort Missoula into an appropriate space for museum collections storage. Fort Missoula is among the largest history museums in Western Montana, welcoming 50,000 visitors and 5,000 local students each year. And we have Matt Lautzenheiser in the room.
Good. Well.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Chairperson Hopkins, committee. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come up today and be able to speak about our project. As she mentioned, the Historical Museum does serve about 50,000 visitors annually in Western Montana. In addition to that, or within that 50,000 number, is about 5,000 school children. One of the things we're most proud of with this is that we do not charge admission to Missoula County residents or any of those school children that come through our site. So they all come for free because we feel that learning about Western Montana's history and our history should be something that there shouldn't be economic barriers with. I did notice as I look at our slide, we should have picked a more exciting picture. But it's kind of hard to pick an exciting picture when you're talking about a warehouse. But this warehouse actually does have some really interesting and really cool history. It was built during the CCC era at Fort Missoula. During the CCC era, about 3,000 to 5,000 young men would be trained on the Fort Missoula campus every summer, with the goal of then sending them off to different projects throughout the Northwest. So Fort Missoula was the Northwest regional headquarters of the CCC. The building we can see was kind of used as a repair shop, a garage, and a warehouse at Fort Missoula during that very end of the CCC era through about 1941. The Historical Museum, which was founded in 1974, took on that building along with a number of other original Fort Missoula buildings. Today we operate a 32-acre campus, about 20 historic structures, and that includes everything from a steam locomotive that used to be in Bonner, Montana, to a trolley car, to an entire section of our site that's devoted towards Montana historic equipment that was used in logging and mining and those type of activities in Western Montana. Our project today is actually we're looking to do some renovations to this building. We currently use it for large collection storage, so that would be Anything from wagons to artifacts from our industrial history to logging history. We actually have a gallows that was used to conduct the last public execution in Missoula County is preserved in that warehouse. But the building is just that. It's a warehouse. It's 70 years old. So it does need some upgrades, and we'd like to be able to better care for our collection and our large items in that space. Currently, our collection has grown to about 50,000 objects, which is an incredible amount of pieces of our local history. The last couple things I'd like to just briefly mention here is that, as always, we are committed to working with local contractors, local design firms, so any of these dollars from this grant would come back to Missoula County and would come back to our community. And then I think the other thing, we talked a little bit about matching, and I've been able to, fortunate enough to listen to you guys discuss this and talk about matching funds and things like that. And as somebody who runs a museum, I can't tell you how important it is to have these larger grants available and potentially have those funds, because we as museums or as cultural institutions can leverage those funds. I'll give you an example. So our museum got a fairly large grant through the Japanese American Confinement Sites Grant Program. We were able to leverage that larger grant to over $100,000 in private foundation support, including one of those, a $25,000 grant from an out-of-state foundation. So we're able then to bring out-of-state dollars back to Montana. But the main reason we get this type of support through these foundations is because that one larger grant comes in and helps us then, because as I always say, everyone wants to be part of the stone rolling down the hill, and no one wants to be part of the stone rolling up. So the grants like you guys are overseeing today open a lot of those doors for small museums. So thank you for the work you're doing on that, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Well, thank you very much. And do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, we appreciate the time this morning,
sir. Thank you.
Chair Hopkins, we did schedule a break at this time. We're happy to keep rolling at the pleasure of the committee.
At the pleasure of the committee, does the committee have a preference? Would the committee like to take a quick 10-minute break? Five. All right. Well, we will schedule it for five, which should mean we'll be back here in 10. I appreciate that. The time is currently 9:53. We will and ask the committee to be back in by 10 o'clock. Long range will stand for a 10, or, well, 5-minute recess. Back on. All right. It looks like we are back in here at exactly 11 minutes, so we're doing really good here this session. With that, we'll go ahead and call the committee back to order. I believe that brings us to project number 13 for those following along in our fun books, and I would turn it back over.
Thank you, Chair Hopkins. Okay, so project 13 on page 22 of the governor's book is Shelby Town Hall. The proposal is to install historically accurate windows on the old Shelby Town Hall. The community is working to restore the historic building, which currently houses the Shelby Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Information Center. And Mackenzie is going to pass around written testimony. We do not have anybody on Zoom or in the room that we know of.
Perfect. Well, we always appreciate written testimony.
Okay, moving along to the next one is Project 14 on page 23 of the governor's book, the Cogswell Taylor House in Virginia City. The proposal is to stabilize and repair the foundation, floors, walls, and roof, along with rehabilitating and installing basic utilities within the building. The Cogswell Taylor House was one of the first properties owned by free African Americans in Montana and is a critical property in Virginia City. And we have Elijah Allen here to speak on this project.
Excellent. Good morning.
Chairman Hopkins, Representatives Elijah Allen, Montana Heritage Commission. I dropped off some cheat sheets for you guys to look at. If you could turn to page 27 of the visitor guide, it might help with a little bit. Mr. Chairperson, Representative again, Elijah Allen, that's spelled E-L-I-J-A-H. Allen is spelled A-L-L-E-N. And I currently serve as the Executive Director for the Montana Heritage Commission that oversees Virginia City, Nevada City, and Reader's Alley in Helena, Montana. For the past 10 years, I've had the pleasure and the challenge of keeping Montana's history standing while also becoming an economic driver for the state. The challenge is 276 heritage properties from the 1860 to 1875 time period. Perspective-wise, if you looked across other historic sites, Colonial Williamsburg has 70. Deadwood, South Dakota has 17. And Tombstone has 7. The challenge is we only operate on tourism-related income and voluntary donations. We also have over 1 million Americana artifacts, ranging from the 1860 to 1960 time period. Again, perspective, that's second to the Gettysburg and the Smithsonian. Virginia City and Nevada City are Montana's number one state-owned tourist destination, with over 1 million tourists visiting from May through September each year. According to Circa Analytics and Rocky Mountain Economic Improvement District, we have an economic footprint of $74.4 million that contributes to 1,226 jobs for Montana. Again, I'd reference page 27 and 28 of the visitor's guide. Each biennium, our commission identifies properties that contribute to Montana's history, but also will contribute to the economic footprint and future earned revenue for future preservation and maintenance. At this time, we have three that did make the list. That was number 14, which is Cogswell Taylor, 25, which is Richard Hickman, who served as Montana's pioneer legislature for the territorial time period, and the Gilbert residence, also a Montana pioneer, legislature, mayor, and owner of Montana's first brewery and Montana's first trademark beer in Montana. In regards to the Cogswell Taylor, it represents our African American history. This property represents three eras of African-American residents and commerce in Virginia City from 1867 through 1931, beginning with Minerva Cogswell and later her sister, Parthenia Sneed, continued with Jack Taylor's tenure, and ending with Sarah Bickford's ownership. The history of this property intertwines with not only the rise and fall of the mining town itself, but more particularly the legacy of African-American presence there. The last owner was Sarah Bickford, that was also inducted into the Montana Historical Hall of Fame and is rumored to be Montana's first African-American female business owner for Montana. Also, if you can reference 13 and 14, it shows a track record. All of these projects will be completed by the next biennium. They will be converted into stay and play in Montana's history vacation rentals, serving Montana's history, but giving tourists and citizens an ability to stay and learn about Montana's territorial capital history. Again, we do have 25 years of proven track record of preserving and promoting our history for our future. And with that, I will stand with any questions that this committee does have.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, and thank you very much for these. Do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, we certainly appreciate the time this morning. Thank you again.
Thank you. Okay, the next three projects tied for 15th place. So we have on page 24 of the governor's book, the Rocky Mountain Building in Great Falls. So the proposal is to restore the facade, including replacing windows. This is phase two of three in a $24 million project that will rehabilitate the structure into a community health center, providing health services and fostering economic development in a blighted area of downtown. And I believe we have Casey Schreiner in the room.
I believe that we do. Good morning, sir. Nice to have you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Casey Schreiner. That's S-C-H-R-E-I-N-E-R. And I'm, may I say, as I said to the chair earlier, if this is the only committee I get to present to this session, I'm glad it's all of you. Good to see some old friends and new roles. For the record, I'm the Vice President of Strategy and Innovation for Alluvian Health. We are Community Health Center Inc. Incorporated, but we do business as Alluvian Health in our community. We are a federally qualified health center, or better known as a community health center. Many of your communities have those that serve as well. This is a big project for the city of Great Falls, not just organization, but it really is going to be the cornerstone of revitalization in downtown Great Falls. This building in 2009 had a substantial fire that basically has made the building up until now unremodable. I just made that word up, by the way. Unredeemable. And without an organization like ourselves taking advantage of these types of opportunities as well as others, it's kind of sat there. There's been multiple owners who have tried to revitalize this. The hope is that this project will serve as not the capstone in downtown revitalization, basically from the Civic Center to this point on Central Avenue, and then really be a kickstart of downtown revitalization moving east in Great Falls. Alluvian Health has a community. This will have an economic impact of around $31.5 million. This is also the largest economic investment from our organization or by any organization in downtown Great Falls, second to maybe the city of Great Falls with the initial development of the Great Falls Civic Center. I have a packet of lots of information for folks describing the project in its totality. The project in its totality, this phase of the project is about $1.1 million that this grant would serve about half of, that we got some other grant funds. But the total project is now, after inflation, about a $30 million injection into our community that we are a third of the way through paying for, and that's with zero debt to the organization or the people of Montana. So I guess with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for any questions, and I would distribute these if the committee would like that.
Please do. You know us too well. We do love us some background and paperwork and deep dive data. And so with that, members, do we have any questions or comments from the committee? Well, seeing none, I would just say it's good to see you. Don't be a stranger. Come over here and hang out with us.
I appreciate that. Mr. Chair, thank you, members.
Thank you.
Our next project, also tied at 15 on page 25, is the History Museum in Great Falls. So the proposal is to install HVAC and exterior wall insulation, electrical upgrades, flooring reinforcement, and a visible vault with additional storage for the collection. The History Museum is a destination for historical research and tourism in central Montana, and we have Christy Scott in person today.
Excellent. Good morning.
Hello, and thank you for having me, Chairman and members of the committee. Christy Scott, that's S-C-O-T-T, and I am the Executive Director of the History Museum in Great Falls that's brought to you by the Cascade County Historical Society. The Montana Historic Preservation Grant Program dovetails meaningfully with the History Museum's project, protecting Montana heritage that's represented in museum collections while caring for a historic building. We seek to add environmental controls, insulation, heating, cooling, and venting, while enhancing the educational area where the public interacts with historic records and material culture. In December, temperatures in our collection storage were as low as 36 degrees, and this summer they were in the high 80s. While a sturdy roof and walls provide basic shelter from the elements, these temperatures and their fluctuations are difficult to work in and counterproductive to our preservation work. The History Museum is located in a three-story, 47,000 square foot building that was built in 1979 on Machinery Row. This building was the International Harvester Tractor Supply Store building, and it is rooted in Montana's agricultural heritage and very unique in Great Falls. Our archives and museum are a wonderful reuse of this historic building that we have been working hard to bring back to its glory for over 20 years. We bought the building in 1999, but the Historical Society and Museum have actually been in operation since 1976. We house tens of thousands of photographs, historic maps, architectural plans, archival records for the city and the county, personal correspondence that it ranges from letters between parents and children at war to diaries, and then over 40,000 artifacts. While our project preserves historic treasures that are important to Montana, it also spurs economic developments that will benefit our entire state. Contractors, laborers, suppliers, planners, and museum paychecks will be generated by this multifaceted project and will contribute to our tax base as well as individuals' lives. HVAC technicians and builders will need to be hired, and a permanent full-time job will be added to the museum's payroll. Our search for additional help is already underway, with part-time helpers being hired for packing and planning, and this growth will continue. I also wanted to note that our board of directors has committed and secured a match of $76,000. An architectural firm has donated $9,000 in planning, and a private donor has donated $10,000. So we're above our match and ready to begin. We've identified viable solutions to our research room limitations and the harsh conditions of freezing cold winters and sweltering summers by working with an architectural firm, engineering specialists who have conducted an audit of the existing HVAC system that doesn't cover this area, just so we have a very holistic picture of heating and cooling for the whole building. We've also worked with structural engineers, all of who have so far donated their time to help us come up with a really comprehensive and sensible plan. By investing in this preliminary planning, our solutions are holistic and make sense. The History Museum's environmental storage upgrades and education center expansion project ensures preservation of a distinctive historic project through increased public interest and value while preserving irreplaceable museum collections that tell the story of our shared heritage. Please favorably consider fully funding the History Museum's project that dovetails so seamlessly with the goals of the Montana Historic Preservation Grant Program. I am happy to answer any questions or give more detail.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate the time this morning. Do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, well, thank you very much. We appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Okay, the last tie for 15 is on page 26 of the governor's book. This is the Copper Village Museum and Art Center in Anaconda. The proposal is expansion of the fire suppression and alarm system into the first, second, and attic floors of the old Anaconda City Hall, owned and operated by Copper Village Museum and Arts Center. The goal of the center is to promote appreciation for the arts and culture and to assist in community cultural and historic preservation. And I would just note this one says 17% match. And again, since this is a nonprofit organization, the match is calculated based on the amount requested. So the match on this one was $47,000. So if you divide that by the amount requested, you get 20%. So they are meeting the match requirement. We were able to get in touch with this applicant, but they weren't sure if they were... Oh, they're here. Excellent. Great.
Good morning.
Hi. My name is Suzanne Konicek. That's K-O-N-I-C-E-K. And I'm here with Shannon. And I am the grant writer for the Copper Village Museum and Arts Center. So thank you so much for having us here today and letting us speak to you about our beautiful historical building, as well as our plan, our proposal. If this proposal is implemented, it will not only ensure the safety of our building, but it will also allow the Copper Village Museum and Art Center to grow in a way that will provide exciting new artistic and economic opportunities to Anaconda. Let me tell you a bit about our building. This Anaconda City Hall is one of the last remaining grand buildings in Anaconda from the late Victorian era. And it is unique in that it is a historical landmark, but it also has a very active presence in our community still today because of the activities of the Copper Village Museum and Art Center. The building was created in 1896, and at that time, it housed municipal offices, but it also had the fire department for the community as well. And today, the spaces that were once occupied by those entities now hold a beautiful art gallery, a wonderful museum, and extensive archive collection that are all run by the Copper Village Museum and Art Center. In 1979, the building was slated for demolition, and that is when a group of very committed community members banded together and saved the building, and they raised over $500,000 for renovations. And since that time, the Copper Village has continued with our predecessors' work, continuing to make improvements to the building all the while. Now, as we are looking to grow and expand even more, we really need to turn our attention to a few of the areas that were left unfinished in the original renovation, and that is one, the fire suppression system. Unfortunately, at the time, it was installed only in the basement level because that's where the museum and archives were held. The other area we are turning our attention toward is this second story, a beautiful second story of the building, which was left in its state of decay. Today, the Copper Village Museum and Art Center has exciting plans to transform that second floor into a performing arts and event space for the community. And we envision many community organizations taking advantage of that space We also envision bringing a professional performing arts series to that space. And with that, we'll be bringing a lot of arts and culture from across the region and beyond to Anaconda. And with that, we'll be bringing economic activity that accompanies those arts and cultural events, such as more dollars spent in restaurants, bars, motels, hotels, and that sort of thing. We know that this kind of project is not going to happen until we ensure the safety of our building. We know that we've lost in Montana a lot of historical buildings to fire, and we just don't want that to happen to our beloved building. So that is why we are pursuing this plan to expand our fire suppression and alarm system so that it reaches all three levels of our building. And that is the basis of the proposal that we have for you to consider today. And before we go, Shannon has a few words.
Shannon Warner, Director of Copper Village Museum and Arts Center, and it's Warner. And I just want to say that we are very dedicated to this project. We have had predecessors work very hard on getting this project where it is today. They started out in a little building and has grown into this building, and they are so many opportunities for growth in this building if we can expand that second floor. You know, we were a thriving smelter town back in the day, and it had a devastating closure, which brought a lot of despair and sadness to our community. And a wonderful group of people knew the importance of art and culture and the impact that it has on lives. And it changes communities. And therefore, they created the Copper. And with all of the hands of the people who were unemployed, came together, carpenters and everybody, and built. And then within the village, Copper Village was created. And we know the impact that it can have. And if we are able to have this space, then we know that we will be able to serve more people. We will be able to have a better impact on old and young, because art changes the lives of so many. Keeping our history alive is absolutely important for people to remember who we are, where we came from. And I know that if we have this, we'll be able to do that. And we have worked very hard. We have secured grant funds that have been able to help us to install a fire escape staircase. It's halfway up, and they're working on it. We had just signed the contract for our architectural preliminary report, which will be the roadmap to our project. We did that with grant funds, and we hope that you will be able to consider us to be able to move forward in this exciting step to make Copper Village a bigger presence in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. And do we have questions, comments from members of the committee? Representative Fitzpatrick.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. After watching my distinguished colleagues from the Highline Pork Barrel on behalf of their districts, I would like to make it a trio. I had the pleasure of being in this building in the last 4 months to see a live theater performance, and one of the things that I quickly noticed is that it is a fire trap. The building is old, the structure is dry. I mean, literally, if it was to catch fire, it'd be gone in 15 minutes. I think it's a very worthy project, and I think it'll do a great deal to sustain that facility in the coming years. Thank you.
Thank you, and I appreciate the both of you keeping the spirit of the feeling of having Jimmy Keene here in the room with us on Section F, going session after session. Are there further questions, comments from members of the committee? What have you done for Butte lately? With that, I think we are good to move forward. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're on number 18, so page 27 in your book. This is the Historic Hotel Libby. This is also another tie, so we've got two number 18s. The proposal is to re-roof the hotel to allow all additional renovation projects to move forward with the ultimate goal of opening as a fully functional hotel for the community of Libby. And we have, is it Bail Berger?
Yeah.
Morning.
Gail, sorry, I apologize for that.
That's all right. Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity. My name is Gail Berger, B-U-R-G-E-R. And Mr. Chairman, committee members, we are just honored to be listed. The hotel is 125 years old. Our roof is almost in complete failure. We walked up there one day to find a large hole and thought, did a raccoon get in? What's going on? So we've been able to do all the Band-Aid repairs that we can. A lot of Flex Seal, gap filler. She's still up there, so that's good. We have about 42 swimming pools and containers. If you look at the paperwork I sent in with the pictures, it's very colorful. Not exactly efficient, but it gets the job done and preserves our original floors in the building. So with that being said, the roof project is really a turning point for the hotel project. Once the roof is completed, we can move forward with the electrical and the plumbing. Our electrician isn't real thrilled about working where there's leaks, you know, water, electricity, I guess, is a thing. But so we'll be able to move forward with the project with the ultimate goal of reopening with 22 rooms as a historic hotel and with a living museum component. So our counter people, our staff will all be in period dress when it's a functional ability to do so. The history of the hotel is amazing. It's 125 years old. The things that it's seen is just phenomenal. We were the site of the first bank in Libby. We were also billed as the finest hotel from Spokane to the Dakotas. Our logbooks show a lot of upper crust of that time staying in the hotel from over in England. We have Scotland, throughout the United States. Winchester Arms is also registered in our logbooks as staying here several times. And so we're just moving forward. Hopefully you'll grant us this funding to continue this hard-fought journey that we're doing with the hotel. When we open, when the project's complete, we'll open to the community with 22 rooms and hopefully a kitchen. We do have community space that is currently being used as well. There are two offices in here. We host tea parties. We've had a horror movie shot here. Paranormal investigation that was live worldwide. We get about 4,000 visitors a year. The last couple of years, of course, we were closed down and didn't allow anybody in. We are now going back to full visitor operations. We don't allow anybody in the large part of the building because we're under restoration, but they do come into the lobby that is restored to functional use for right now. When the hotel is completed, we'll supply 22 jobs to Libby, putting in an estimated $300,000 into our community, which is listed as a depressed community. We also are listed on the historic register. Again, thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate the time this morning. Do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you so much for your time. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, the second project that tied for 18th place is the Old Roosevelt School in Red Lodge. On page 28 So the proposal is window repair and replacement. The foundation has completed many repairs for the building. However, this project will allow for the final phase to complete the interior renovations and thereby open the third floor for business incubation rental space and community use of the lecture hall. So I believe we have Kathleen Healy or Tracy Timmons on Zoom.
I see you there. Good morning.
My name is Kathleen Healy, spelled H-E-A-L-Y. I'm the Roosevelt Center Director in Red Lodge, Montana. Before the flood in June of 2022, the Roosevelt Center had 28 tenants, ranging from artists to musicians, small business owners, and area nonprofits, as well as 3 full-time employees and 2 part-time employees. 7 of the rooms were damaged during the recent flood, and the work to restore these spaces to pre-flood conditions is finally close to wrapping up 7 months later. The damage to the lower level of the historic 1920s side of the building meant removing everything down to the framing, including tearing out the subflooring. With the flood restoration work behind us, we are back on track with restoring the rest of the 102-year-old building on Red Lodge's Main Street and getting the displaced tenants back into the building and paying rent to the center. With the proposed funding for the Montana Historic Preservation Grant Program, the Roosevelt Center would be able to move forward with the revitalization work, including updating the exterior windows, repairing damaged parapet cap and corbels, as well as repointing the masonry and removing and replacing the top 18 inches of the chimney and repointing all mortar joints. The window update will immediately and dramatically transform this building on Main Street. Considering the brutal winter conditions in Red Lodge, the historic windows have not weathered well. The chimney teeters dangerously 3 stories above a walkway, and fixing it would allow us to sleep better at night knowing it won't harm innocent passerbys. The 500-year flood didn't close our doors. We remained operational, hosting conferences, performances, and meetings. We just wrapped up a successful year with 5,734 attendees who came out for 163 different events in 2022. We would like to be able to continue to invest in the future of the Roosevelt Center as a meeting place for the community and continue to provide a place for winter's farmers markets, community dances, Red Lodge Theater Company performances, and other events. While Red Lodge is known for its scenic beauty and outdoor recreational opportunities in summer and winter, we have worked hard to encourage visitors to explore the thriving arts community. Sorry, I'm winded and I'm 36 weeks pregnant with twins.
Oh, you're perfectly fine.
It's been particularly beneficial for local businesses during the late spring and fall shoulder seasons. We intend to continue to provide a space for burgeoning small businesses, incubating and investing in the next 100 years of Red Lodge's growth. Preserving this building helps us to increase awareness of the history of Red Lodge while expanding the walkability of our downtown business district by 2 additional blocks. It'll help revitalize and restore the Roosevelt Center as an arts, culture, performance, reception, conference, education, and community gathering space. Thank you for your time and your consideration. Are there any questions?
Thank you so much for your time. And do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, once again, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Okay, the next 3 projects are tied for 20th place. So we'll start with the Kelly Block Building in Butte on page 29 of the governor's book. This proposal is to replace the roof framing, re-roof, rehabilitate the original penthouse, and install 2 fire stairs for code compliance in the Kelly Block in Uptown Butte. The Kelly Block is an $8.5 million project that will reactivate a mixed-use building with 15,900 square feet of commercial space on the first floor and 14 condominiums on the second, third, and fourth floor. And we have John Montoya on Zoom.
Excellent. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, this is John Olson, and I right now do not have a John Montoya in either attendees or panelists.
All right. Well, thank you, John. We appreciate it. And generally, what we tend to do here is if at some point later on in the meeting, individual jumps online, we can capture that then. If not, no harm, no foul. Sound about right? Okay. With that, I think we are good to move on. And thank you, John.
Okay, so the second project tied for 20 is the Montana Club in Helena. So this is on page 30 in the governor's book. The proposal is HVAC system upgrades and ADA compliant restrooms. The project would improve temperature control in the club to allow for comfortable year-round use of the Rathskeller second and sixth floors of the historic six-story structure in downtown Helena. And I believe we might have a couple of folks here in person.
Well, good morning there, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. My name is Charles Robison. That's R-O-B-I-S-O-N. I do represent the Montana Chamber of Commerce. I'm here today on my behalf of myself and the Montana Club Cooperative, and Bruce Spencer also sends his greetings and asks that I pass on his support for this project. I'm the Vice President of the Montana Club Cooperative. We have been open to the public as a co-op since 2018, when the private club that had cared for this building for 130-some years handed the keys over, and along with the debts and the real estate, to a cooperative, many of the original members joining the co-op and many other folks in the community doing the same to help preserve this historic building and the services we provide to the community of Helena and to the state of Montana. The match in this application is 25% of the grant, 20% of the total project. So, real briefly, I'll just say they don't build them like they used to. And the upside is that we have an amazing six-story gem in downtown Helena that anchors our community and supports the tax base. And a downside is that keeping up mechanical and plumbing can be a real bear. And for our co-op, it has been a real challenge. The building originally built by millionaires, but most of the building now is owned, like I said, by a co-op. We're everyday Montanans contributing to this ongoing project in this building for the future of our community. As I mentioned, Bruce Spencer, he's a former president of the club. He asked that I share. He's also a proponent. Bruce is a trustee of the Punk Ward Fund that is committed to provide the matching funds for this project. And I can answer any questions you have.
Well, thank you, sir. And do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, we appreciate your time here this morning. Thank you for coming down to talk to us.
You're welcome.
Okay, the last project tied for 20 is the Charles Krug House on page 31 of the governor's book. This project is in Glendive. So the proposal is to replace windows in this 1907 house, which currently operates as a 25-room Airbnb business and office space. We have something a little bit different on this one. The project recently changed ownership. We just learned about this last Friday. So Mackenzie just circulated written testimony from the new owners, but this is a different situation than we haven't had this happen in the past. So I would just note that for you. And then looking on our slide here, we have again the 17% match. So this is a for-profit applicant. They are proposing a $30,000 match. So that would be 20% of the $145,000 grant award. So they would meet the match requirement for that. We only have written testimony. We don't have anyone in person or on Zoom today.
Okay, members, I would say add that into our written testimony stack. Be sure to peruse at your leisure, and we'll take any questions, comments. Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would assume the new owner is Eastlick. Is that correct?
Chair Hopkins, Senator Lang, that's correct.
And they would be, they're willing to put up the cash that the Sonia Maxwell was going to put up?
Chair Hopkins, Senator Lang, you're correct. That's what they say in their testimony.
Thank you, Senator Lang. Are there further questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, I think we're good to move forward.
Okay, so the next two projects are tied for number 23. So we're going to start with the Glendive Greenhouse at Bloom Coffee House and Eatery in Glendive, and this is on page 32. So this proposal is to clear out foliage and debris from the structure, install concrete, flooring, HVAC, and lighting, and replace a broken panel and doors for the conservatory at the Glendive Greenhouse. So this structure houses the Bloom Coffee House and Eatery, which is a small business and tourism asset in eastern Montana. This project would activate an unused portion of the property for a venue space and provide for increased operations, creating an estimated 13 part or full-time jobs. And we do just have written testimony for this one. This is also a case where, because it's a for-profit, match is calculated from the amount requested. So they're proposing to provide a $50,000 match, which would be 20% of the amount requested of $250,000.
Okay, and once again, adding to our written testimony stack, do we have any questions or comments from members of the committee at this moment? Seeing none, I think that we will move on.
Okay, so the second project tied at number 23 on page 33 of the governor's book is the Edwards and McClellan block in Malta. The proposal is restoration of the historic cornice, installation of energy efficient and code compliant storefront windows, and foundation stabilization. The inn at Symington Square is a historical commercial building in downtown Malta that attracts out-of-town tourists to stay and shop locally, and I believe we have Gina Symington on Zoom.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Gina Symington, S-I-M-A-N-T-O-N, and together with my husband, Scott, we would like to thank you for allowing me to speak about our project and clarify some items on our grant application. Full disclosure, this is the first grant we have ever been a part of. We were unaware that this grant even existed when we took on this project 2 years ago, but we are so thankful for the opportunity to apply for it. Scott is a native of Phillips County, and I have resided here for 41 years. Malta is our home, and we are proud of it. We have put our entire life savings and a substantial mortgage obtained from our local bank into two formerly vacant and decaying buildings in downtown Malta, known as the Anthony's and Edwards McClellan buildings. The Anthony's building was purchased in 2017 to house our state liquor store and travel agency, and after a complete renovation, it now houses these businesses and spaces leased to an additional business with 3 employees. During that renovation, Scott discovered the Anthony's building was literally built onto the adjacent corner building, the Edwards McClellan building. Our building, the former Anthony's building, will not stand without that corner building. We purchased the Edwards and McClellan building, and after having extensively updated and renovated to include new wiring, plumbing, heating, an ADA compliant bathroom, restoring the original features, replaced the original upper level windows, the main level now houses a country store that employs 10 people. In 2021, the upstairs was converted into the inn at Symington Square. It is a vacation rental with 5 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, full kitchen, den, and dining room with amazing views of downtown Malta. The inn is rented to an out-of-state outfitter who has roots in Montana for 3 months every fall for the next several years further adding to the state's tax base by way of the lodging and facilities taxes. The inn has also been home to bird watchers from Maine, wedding and reunion guests from out of state, many who arrived via Amtrak, and even hosted Governor and Mrs. Gianforte for dinner, as well as an events venue. Locals often refer to the inn as an annex to the Phillips County Museum. Since the initial grant application, the Edwards and McClellan building has been accepted to the National Historic Registry. During the process, we learned about this grant opportunity. As the building is 113 years old, it needs further repairs as outlined in the grant. To address concerns about the economic impact of this project, all grant proceeds will remain 100% within the state of Montana. The main contractor for the project resides in Great Falls and is a Phillips County native. He has the specialized equipment, knowledge, and work crew that is necessary to repair the cornice. Other Malta businesses will be utilized for supplies, hardware, lumber, and concrete. Scott has 40 plus years experience working as a carpenter and will complete much of the construction on the main and basement levels as in-kind contributions and hire local laborers as well. We will contract with Philco Economic Growth Council for grant management services. We are aware of the conditions pertaining to our grant, and we are prepared to proceed with public hearing to address environmental concerns and provide clarification of 2022 in-kind contributions when the grant is awarded. The building was erected in 1910, purpose-built as a mercantile on the ground level and offices upstairs. We have documented history that the building has continually housed a mercantile, general store, or clothing store since 1910, and that the upstairs housed the original city office until City Hall was built. Thank you for your time and consideration of our National Historic Preservation Grant application for funding improvements to the Edwards and McClellan building. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much for your time, and I will check in if there's any questions, comments from members of the committee at this time. Seeing none, we have Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm assuming the senator from across the way that Southeast Montana or Southwest Montana wants to comment, but we welcome him to come stay at these beautiful apartments that have been designed. And I appreciate Scott and Gina. It is very truthful at the fact that they put a lot of their own hard work and money. Scott could probably make a lot more money somewhere else. He's a very great Finnish carpenter. He enjoys his work, and this building is truly becoming a it always was a landmark, but it's being more of a landmark now with his renovations. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Lang. Further questions? Questions, comments from members of the committee. Representative Fitzpatrick.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, having spent an awful lot of time in Malta in days gone by when I was employed in the mining industry, I would strongly support this this project. And I also want to reserve two draft choices in the future so we can keep up with Senator Lang.
That's a pretty fair point there, Representative Fitzpatrick. Do we have further questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, once again, Gina, thank you very much for your time here this morning. We certainly appreciate it.
Chair, we have a decision point here. So we just got through our first half of projects. So we were scheduled to resume projects tomorrow. So I don't know how the board wants to, whether they want to continue on or wait till tomorrow.
So members, my assumption is we still have about 4 days on the calendar for this, or did we reduce to three? I think we stuck at four.
Mr. Turbin, yes, we have 4 days total. Yes,
okay, so for the committee's discussion, as we were just was just pointed out to us, we're about halfway through our project list. In addition to the project list, like we were talking about earlier on today, I'd like to have some time before we're out of the House Bill 12 period in our schedule, long before we get to executive action, have a discussion about past work in this area and how it's been working while being implemented. So I'm fine to do whatever the committee would like to do, but my basic starting point would be to stick to our schedule, stop the committee's work after today, run through the rest of the projects tomorrow, please.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add, so we did let applicants know that there was a chance that things could move faster to be prepared, but we don't have a sense for how many that are scheduled to come tomorrow are ready to go. So just for your consideration.
That's a good point for consideration. And also, but, you know, say that we were to go with stopping the work today, if we happen to have individuals online that had called in to make sure, just in case there was a chance that we got down to their project, I'd be fine capturing that testimony too. But just wanted to throw out some basic ideas and hear from members of the committee. Anybody got preferences? Representative Fitzpatrick.
Mr. Chairman, I'd represent that we request that we just adjourn for the day. If they don't have witnesses, there's no sense sitting around and denying them the chance to testify on the bill.
Fair. Anybody else? Okay, well, before we continue this incredibly engaging discussion, I would just go ahead and ask John online on our individuals, and do we recognize any other names here that might be waiting to testify just in case their project happens to come up?
Mr. Chairman, it looks like we may have one, but I think most everybody is not online.
Yeah, and I should have probably done that in a way to help you out a little bit. If there was an attendee that did have a project that we have not gone over yet, if you could go ahead and raise your hand for a second so that John can clearly see, I'd appreciate it. And then let's go back to the podium here in the room for a second.
I believe we have Michelle Williams.
Yeah.
Michelle Williams, is that the one that you were thinking about? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, if the committee's okay with it, I'd go ahead and ask us to capture this testimony right now, and then we can finish up the rest of our discussion. Does that sound fair? Okay. We would go ahead and do that. And before we get to you online here, Michelle, we'll go here to the podium in the room.
Sounds good. Can we get the PowerPoint back up?
Push comes to shove, if you just want to point it to us here in either of our booklets.
If we had page numbers, it would be a lot easier.
That's pretty true.
I will, you can go into the governor's book to page 36. This is actually in the next grouping of projects, which have all tied for 25. So this is great. We're still moving in order. This is the Billings Depot. The proposal is to refinish exterior doors, repair sidewalks, roof, and floors, and restore the historic post building at the Billings Depot. So the depot is an event space in downtown that hosts 100-plus events each year, anchoring downtown Billings and bringing 10,000 individuals into the area. And with that, I'd pass it off to Michelle Williams.
Good morning, Michelle. Thank you for waiting for us there.
No, of course. I hope I'm not keeping you from an early lunch. Thank you for having me. My name is Michelle Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, and I am the executive director of the Billings Depot since 2018. We are a historic train station. The depot was built in 1909 to service three different railroads at the time, and we were placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1978. We have played host to presidents, dignitaries, historical figures like Calamity Jane and Buffalo Bill Cody, and even World War I soldiers have passed through our campus. The depot was, like I said, a passenger train service at the time, and the last passenger train left our depot in 1979, and the four-block campus fell into complete disrepair and was vacant, except for transients and a ridiculous number of pigeons, until the 1990s when Ron Howard brought his crew to film scenes from Far and Away with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. And that really kind of inspired the community to rally around this campus and dedicate time, resources, and monetary funds to restore the old buildings. So today, the campus now operates as a community event center. We host as many as 200 events. throughout the course of a year, servicing individuals and events and organizations from not just the Billings and Yellowstone County, but all around the state and the region, like the Big Sky Passenger Rail Authority, the Montana Chamber of Commerce, the Montana Historical Hospital Association, Montana Auto Dealer Association, Montana Beef Council. We even secured and hosted an event for Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board and then the National Association of Agricultural Agents. So our history is extremely important to the community, and we support tourism and events and economic development throughout the entire state and region. The depot formed as the nonprofit. We are a 501c3 community nonprofit, and our mission is to not only restore, preserve, and protect our historic campus, but also to impact the growth spirit and vitality of the Billings community. So nothing we do at the depot is singular in benefit to the depot itself. We partner with all of our community organizations like Big Sky Economic Development, Visit Billings for Tourism, Downtown Billings Alliance, Historic Montana Avenue Association, to really help them push forward goals for the overall community as a whole, like implementing new green space or promoting workforce development and talent attraction. So the project, Capital Impact Renovations, really does help us not only continue to host really special community celebrations and events and promote organizational growth, but it also helps us to continue our impact in those significant areas within the community for economic development, tourism, and entrepreneurial growth. So I think an important thing to also mention is that our board is really selected strategically to support these projects. This capital improvement impact renovation project, we have representatives from two different architectural firms. One firm was responsible for the original restoration of our campus back in the late 90s. We have attorneys, we have different banks, we have a preservation officer, and representatives from each one of our community partners, Big Sky Economic Development, Visit Billings, the Chamber, Downtown Billings Alliance, to make sure that everything we do within this project aligns with community goals and maintains the integrity of our historic preservation for this campus. We also, since the application process, we were the first venue in Yellowstone County to be certified as a certified autism center in support of the community's larger goal of being a certified autism destination. So that's really exciting. And my last comment is that we do have all of the matching funds available immediately. We are shovel ready. We have all of our contractors in place and are ready to start right away. So thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it. And do we have any questions, comments from members here in the room? Seeing none, again, thank you very much for your time here this morning.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, John. I see
We have Mr. Montoya that has joined us and would like to speak.
Perfect. So the way that we're going to do this committee is, it looks like I would anticipate we have two individuals, one in the room, one online, that would be looking to speak. So we're going to go ahead and capture our in the room first. Then we are going to capture Mr. Montoya online. That will count for the end of our meeting for the day. We will then look to capture the rest of our testimony during tomorrow's meeting. Does that sound pretty fair? Excellent. I'm getting a lot of agreement in fairness. So with that, we'll go ahead and have our testimony here in the room. Thank you.
Okay, so the project that was ranked number 29, so go to page 38 in the governor's book. This is the Wheeler property in West Glacier. The proposal is to repair the roof, upgrade plumbing and electrical, install bathrooms, parking, and accessible paths, regrade the sides of the structure, repair the foundation, sill logs, doors, windows, balcony, and exterior of the property.
This property will be used for the Waterton Glacier International Peace Park Center, which will educate stakeholders on transboundary cooperation and conservation. And we have Doug Mitchell in the room.
Good morning.
I'm going to defer one moment to Mackenzie Espeland, if that's okay with you.
That is totally fine.
Thank you, committee. I just wanted to point out this is another one that has the little bit of the weird match. So currently it says 19%. It's actually $117,000 of $493,000 of request. So it's actually about 24%. Just.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Mitchell. That's M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L. And it is my privilege to be before you today as the executive director of the Glacier National Park Conservancy, the official nonprofit philanthropic partner of Glacier National Park. You know, it's great to be here to talk about our grant request to provide critical funding for the restoration of the Senator Burton K. and Lulu Wheeler cabin on the north shore of Lake McDonald in Glacier National Park. One of the first places that then Superintendent Jeff Mao took me when I became the executive director of the Conservancy in 2017 was this historic cabin of Montana's senior United States Senator Burton K. Wheeler. The very moment he opened the door of the cabin, closed to the public because of health and safety issues, I knew at that very moment that I was about to step into history. And that's what our grant request is all about, making the living history of Montana available again in a way that will inspire people with the abject wonder you can't help but experience when you stand in that special place. It's about hope and history. It's about peace and promise, and about caring and community. When completed with your support, this project will have turned a closed, run-down but intriguing structure where visitor interest is piqued but unfulfilled by a single interpretive sign into a vibrant center for learning and education. The resulting Waterton Glacier International Peace Park Center at Wheeler Cabin will be a place, I hope, where leaders can gather to discuss shared ideas and even negotiate challenging topics. Where students can gather in real-life classrooms in Glacier National Park and explore a variety of topics, from political history to the environmental sciences and nearly every place in between. This seems a grand vision, and it's okay if you ask whether we can do it, because yes, we can. How do I know? Because soon after my start at the Conservancy, we had a little fire in Glacier National Park, and we lost the Sperry Chalet. With the steadfast leadership of Secretary Zinke, buy-in from contractors, supporters, Sperry lovers, and more, the chalet was rebuilt in 2 summer seasons, 20 weeks, on time and under budget. This project certainly is different in some ways, but in the most important ways, it is exactly the same. By completing it, we will be preserving an important landmark within the confines of Glacier National Park in a way that respects the landscape, embraces the Wheeler legacy of independence, and invites exploration and wonder. Mr. Chairman, the next chapter in Glacier's remarkable history is being written right here today. And I'd like to thank the Department of Commerce for all of the work they do to make these days happen and these projects happen, and for all they do to make Montana a better place to live, work, and play. Thank you for your time today and for choosing public service. Your commitment of time, talent, and treasure to serve Montana is a great gift. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for your time, and I'm a pretty big fan of the Department of Commerce as well. So, do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee? Oh, sir, it looks like we might have a question for you from Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mitchell, or perhaps the department, unlike, I think, perhaps every other project on our list, this is located on federal land. So that's got to be more complex. Can you or the department speak to us about what those challenges might be? And I'm certain that you've taken that into account with regard to spending these dollars?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuss, it's a great question. And again, the Sperry Project stands in evidence of very, very, very similar issues, right? On inside the park needs to be a major construction project. Much of the compliance for this project has already been done in advance of my standing here today. There are a number of complex compliance issues, and we've been working closely with the park on those. We don't see that any of those is going to be a barrier to us in this case and make it any either more difficult or more expensive to implement. So we're very confident that we see that horizon and can reach for it.
Further questions, comments? Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mitchell, what else will is a potential usage of this facility other than just meeting rooms and or that kind of stuff? Can people stay there overnight? Can they rent the facility or like the Sperry? Or?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Lang, it's a small, one basically a one-bedroom house, so it wouldn't be used for any sort of occupancy that would compete with any of the concessionaires in the park. There would likely be a caretaker or a student who would stay there. But we envision, whether it's corporate meetings or student meetings, that it would be at least to start a day-use facility for those kind of purposes.
Thank you, Senator Lang. Are there further questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again for your time, sir. With that, we'll go ahead and go online. John, if we could bring Mr. Montoya back up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I was instructed to log on at 11 to speak to the Kelly block in view. If it's not too late, I would like to say a few statements, if that's okay with the committee.
Please.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. And thank you, Chairman, and everybody on the Long Range Planning Committee for considering this project. My name is John Montoya, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the owners for the structural repairs of 75 East Park in Uptown Butte. This historic building was originally built in 1892 and has been seriously neglected since around 2008 when the Park Street Gym vacated the building. However, during the gym's tenure, the third floor and penthouse were vacant for about 50 years. And during this time, there was significant water damage that occurred, damaging structural floor framing and structural members below. Currently, this historically significant building is an unusable eyesore, as you can see. Essentially, it's a poster child for the years of neglect that have occurred here. To date, the owner has dedicated a substantial sum of about $1.2 million to reinforce and replace the structure at the basement level, first floor, and second floor. And this work was required before work associated with this grant can be started. There are two things that this grant will address. First, the structural damage to the upper floors of this building. The owner has put on a temporary roof membrane and associated drainage to facilitate the structural repairs that are occurring at the basement, first and second floor at this time. The temporary protection will allow us to continue to move up in the floors to correct the most damaged part of this building at the upper levels. The second part of this grant will help us address is a code compliance stair that will be built from the roof level back down to the street level. This grant will, all the money will stay right here in Montana and specifically Butte. First, the design and construction, including all the engineering, to make this building safe and comfortable will cost around $630,000. All these professionals and contractors live and work in Montana. Second, the purchase of building materials and meals from workers during the 5 month construction is estimated between $315,000 and $415,000. In total, the total financial distribution to employees and suppliers in Montana, and the lion's share being in Butte, is roughly $1 million. And once complete, this building will provide individuals and businesses in Butte with offices, retail, and residential. This is both a financial and quality of life benefit. We are asking for $500,000 towards this estimated $968,000 project. And it is worth noting that the total repairs to this building to make it occupiable once again in Uptown Butte is estimated at $9.8 million. We have heard many words of gratitude from the community for saving this historic building. There appears to be much collective memory in this building. This grant will help ensure the preservation of this iconic piece of architecture for the next 100 years. And with that, again, I thank you for your time and apologize for being a little bit late.
Well, thank you very much for your time. We certainly appreciate it. And do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee? Questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again for calling in, sir. We appreciate the time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Please.
Chair Hopkins, if you would allow it, we have our director, Director Osterman, here, and I don't believe he's going to be able to come tomorrow, so I was just wondering if he wanted to say a few quick words.
I think we can probably squeeze in Director Osterman. Good morning there, sir.
Mr. Chair, my name is Scott Osterman, members of the committee. That's O-S-T-E-R-M-A-N. I'm very excited about the process that we've gone through. I think we've revised the process to look at return on investment and benefiting communities in a way that I know has put Renee and her team through some paces. But I do believe that this long-term investments in maintaining Montana's history is a legacy that hopefully we pass on to our kids and our grandkids, and what makes this state very, very unique and remaining unique in itself. So I really appreciate the time and effort that you put through, you go through to go through these historic preservation grants, and the opportunity to investigate what we've done, ask questions. We're never afraid of having questions asked, and I think it's most important that you're comfortable with the recommendations that we're making. And if you're not, then we need to understand why not, and come to a resolution. You know, we don't necessarily see everything exactly the same way, and so I think it's I call it dynamic tension when you have the differences of opinion, and I believe that that's what make organizations and everything function better. So thank you very much to the long-range planning group here and your committee, and as we looked ahead, because Montana will be here long in the future, but so will the legacy of our decisions, and we want to make good ones. So thank you very much.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
I stand for any questions if you have any.
Absolutely. Well, we certainly appreciate it, and we'll ask for any questions or comments from members of the committee. Seeing none, as always, sir, a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for stopping by. So, folks, seeing as I am a very experienced chair and never fail to remember to do this, I will go ahead and call for public comment here in the room. Public comment here in the room. I'll then ask John if we see any extras online for public comment online. Oh, John, looks like we had you unmuted at first. There we go.
Apologize. Mr. Chairman, it looks like we don't have anybody in the attendee that is raising their hand.
Perfect. All right. Well, then, with that, folks, a couple quick things to cover before I let you out for the day. Appreciate you sticking around for those last couple pieces that, you know, it's testimony we don't have to capture tomorrow, so inevitably we make that time up one way or another. So first, there is an announcement. We're talking about House Bill 12 here. A good part of that is talking about accommodation taxes, and it just so happens that there is indeed a presentation on accommodation taxes, revenue, and distributions. It's a legislative fiscal division training that'll be happening tomorrow at 7:15 a.m. or or 1215. It's about a 30-minute training, and it looks like it'll be taking place in room 114. Does that sound about right? So we'll have a few of these trainings being put on through the beginning of the session, which is a great one for just freshman legislators who aren't involved in the appropriations, finance, and claims twilight zone that we all exist in. But then also is helpful for us, because as we go from bill to bill, from funding source to funding source, I would take a guess and say we'll be continuing our trainings along the lines of those funding sources. So make sure to stop by that tomorrow morning. Katie, do you have anything else to add? Oh, yes, and we have a work session on Monday. You'll be seeing we did revise our schedule for subcommittee just a little bit, and we'll probably have to do so maybe another time here as we move forward. And Katie, do you want to talk to us about our work session on Monday just a little bit?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. So I haven't posted the updated schedule yet. I need to talk with you about that in a second. But we did have a tentative work session scheduled for Monday in light of all of the questions from yesterday about the cultural and aesthetic grants, the administrative cost. I'm looking to get, first of all, our revenue analyst, Sam Schaefer, to come by and talk to us about the coal severance tax, the interest earnings for the cultural trust, and how that's used for those grants, and then also have the fiscal analyst that is assigned to the Arts Council for their operating budget come and talk to us about those administrative costs, because those do occur in House Bill 2. So I thought it might be helpful for the committee to get a better understanding of what exactly that is and what that includes. So that is Monday. I think we were just looking at what time the committee would like to do that. Thank you.
And while I have you all here, so when we were talking about the work group, my thought was starting it at either 9 or 10 o'clock. That way you don't have to worry about getting here at 8 a.m. And 9 or 10 o'clock, I think, gives us plenty of time to get the information that we need before I need to send you all off to lunch or to floor. Does anybody have a preference between those two, 9 or 10 o'clock? All right. Well, 9 o'clock it is then. I know that was the preferred time for everybody here on committee, so I'm glad that I was able to accommodate. With that, we can talk about everything else tomorrow. Folks, thank you very much for your time here today. Thank you very much to department and to everybody who came to talk to us. And with that, folks, we will be in at 8 a.m. Tomorrow morning to continue with House Bill 12 and long-range planning. We'll stand adjourned for the day.